Okay, so this is the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference for September 26th, 2018. Ken Freeland and Cheryl Curtis facilitating. Craig McKee, secretary. Craig, you want to call the roll?
Yeah, sure. I'll read what I have here. Craig McKee, Ken Freeland, Cheryl Curtis, Barbara Honegger, Nita Renfrew, Barton Bruce, Barry Zwicker, Wayne Costi, Frank Tolopko, Dick Attlee, Gene Laratonda, Dave Hooper, David Cole, Lawrence Fine, Marie Spike, Lynn Bradbury, Bill Wilt, Bonnie Faulkner, Xander Arena, Marty Hopper, James Hufford, Greg Longo, and Kelly David, and I'm just seeing if there's people that are just...
Andy Steele.
Andy Steele's on here, okay.
Adam
Ruff. Adam Ruff, okay. I've got you. Somebody's got some real bad background.
Yeah, somebody's got some real bad. Thank you.
Tim Michael. Okay, sir.
And Sherry Aspen, did you get that? Did you get me?
Sorry, Sherry, what was the name?
At Sherry Aspen, A-S-P-E-N.
Oh, right, okay. Okay.
Okay, did you get Tim Michael?
Yes.
Okay, now who's the 707 number? 707-509? Who's that, please?
Bonnie Faulkner.
That's Bonnie, okay. We'll write you in. And who's the 66343 number?
Did you get Susan Serpa?
That is Adam Ruff.
Oh, that's you, Adam? Okay. Okay, Sue Serpa I've got.
And Sheila Casey as well.
The 66343 number is Susan. Is that correct? Whoever that is muted.
No, that's
okay,
Adam
so
Ruff.
That's Adam Ruff. Okay. Got it. All right. Thank you.
Also, Peter Ketchum. I didn't hear my name called.
Oh, okay. I didn't see you, Peter. Sorry.
Hi, Peter. Okay.
Did you get me, Craig?
Yes, I got you, Sheila.
Okay, and then lastly, the 571524 number. Who's that?
That's me, Sheila.
That's Sheila Casey. Okay, thank you.
Is Wayne not on this call?
Oh, did I not say? I said Wayne, I thought.
You
did,
said
did I not?
Wayne.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Here.
Is Barbara on?
Yes.
Okay, good. I think Nita, are you on, Nita? There's two Nitas in here, but I don't think she's even
Nitas
on the call.
Yeah, there's two Nitas. Yeah, you're right. There are two Nitas. Nita, are you on the call? Nita Renfrew? Oh, man. How can that be?
Yeah.
Two people calling in by Skype, I would guess. Huh?
So the one that's Mark Nita was on the call about 10 minutes before everybody else. So if anyone recognizes that.
Okay, so we need to know... because if we don't
Sherry.
Get an
idea. Is that Sherry coming in under that?
Sherry Aspen. I don't see her name elsewhere.
I'm on 641. I'm on my Skype number.
It ends in
0632.
Yeah. Okay, so we need to figure out which one that is.
I think it's the one with the 36 minutes duration on the call.
How long have you been on the call, Sherry?
About maybe 3 minutes or so.
Huh. Now it's getting really ridiculous. Well, you know what? I'm going to just drop the two people who are showing up as Nita Renfrew. And if you call back, just please identify yourself. I hate to do this, but we have no other way of identifying who you are. So I'm going to have to drop
Richard
you for
Gage.
Now.
Richard
Gage
is here too, Ken.
Hi, Richard.
Oh, maybe
I'm
he's
have to
one
drop
of the Nitas.
Hi, Richard.
Maybe he's one of the Nitas. Oh, no, his name is there. Okay.
No. So I'm going to drop the two that are coming up as Nita Renfrew. And then when you call back, just let us know who you are. Okay, sorry about this. Okay, So we're ready now for approval of the minutes from the previous teleconference. I guess, Craig, you got the forward from somebody whose name was omitted.
Yeah, Peter Ketchum was not so on the last one, so I'll send you a new version with that added in.
Okay. Any other amendments to the minutes other than including Peter Ketchum in the roll call? All right, hearing none, then we'll take the minutes for approve from last week and move on to the draft agenda for tonight. Any amendments to the draft agenda before we adopt it?
This is Wayne.
Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to recommend that we move David Hooper up to before the agenda item where we're going to talk about Craig's issue. We all want to make sure that David Hooper gets to talk. And we have no idea how long this next section is going to last.
Okay, well, so there's a proposal.
No, actually, as much as I love it, Wayne, and I appreciate that, let's just go through your normal business. I've got my presentation down to 5 minutes. We'll be okay. And I want us to end on a, just going to end on a good note. So thank you. I appreciate it. But I say we stick to the agenda.
David, you could be here at 11 o'clock. We'd like to have more people listen to what you say.
Okay, it's okay. Let's not debate it. There's been a proposal. Is there a second to the proposal to move this item? Well, it fails for lack of a second.
What's the item? I just can't.
The item is to move David Hooper's item agenda up ahead of number 4. Is there a second?
Okay, I'm ignorant, so I'll pass.
Okay. Is there a second for the motion? Okay. Since there is no second, the motion fails. Okay. Any other amendments to the agenda?
This is Tim Michael. At this point, I would like to ask Tim Michael.
Okay.
My number is 909-764-0044, and I don't think that came up. I don't think that it's showing up. So it's showing up as an unidentified number.
Oh,
so
did you just call back in, Tim?
I just called back in.
Okay.
I just called back in, too.
I did, too. This is Sherry.
This is
San Diego. This is Sherry in San Diego. One of those numbers you cut me off, I just called back in, too.
Okay.
I'm calling on my Skype number that ends in 0632.
Okay. So, Cheryl, can you take care of that?
417-150-0632.
Yeah, can you edit those two so that we have the proper names?
And I'm Wilt, and I got bumped out, and I just dialed back in.
Hmm.
So we cut off two, and we have three people who got cut off. That's
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Can I make a suggestion since we have such a large group tonight? We sometimes have challenges with audio when we have a lot of people. So I would just encourage everybody to be conscious of that fact and to do their very best to speak clearly and loudly so that, you know, any kind of limitations to the audio will not make them difficult to hear, because I know there are times when it's really a strain. So,
and if you mute your audio while others are talking, it will go a long way towards helping.
Yeah,
correct. Yeah.
We do that during the presentations anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
I think
so,
Ken is going to do that for everybody at once when we start the presentation.
Really generally, yeah. Okay. So, are there any other?
Dwayne Deets here.
Yes, Dwayne. Dwayne, go ahead.
No, I'm Dwayne just Deets. saying I'm just on the line.
Okay,
I
thank you. Dwayne Deets is here. Okay. So,
hi, Dwayne.
So, any other amendments to the agenda before we proceed?
This is Tim Michael. I would just like to request some time to discuss item number 4, a minute or two.
Or everybody will have that opportunity. Okay.
Okay, great. Okay, no problem.
Okay, so any other amendments to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, then we'll take the amendment. The agenda is adopted for tonight's use, and we'll move on to our first item. And that would be Xander, Xander Arena. And let's see, Xander will be introduced by Cheryl. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah. So I'm thrilled that Xander has chosen to do a presentation on this topic. And Xander is a nuclear medicine technologist, credentialed in nuclear medicine and radiation safety. He's a volunteer for AE 911 Truth. Xander is a member of the professional verifications team and also an active member of the Arizona State University 9/11 Studies and More Research Club in Phoenix, Arizona. He's a member of the American Mensa, and he is principally interested in factual accountings of the events which shape our world and took a keen interest in the Las Vegas atrocity when it became evident it was yet another flawed mythology, possibly with criminal implications for those directly involved with the 9/11-2001 mass murder atrocity. So, Xander, take it away.
All right. Hello, everybody. One favor, if for some reason my audio is not clear, please feel free to interrupt the call so we can get it corrected.
Yeah, the volume is low. The volume is low, okay, just to let you know.
Okay, volume is low. So I'm speaking up a little bit, and a year ago, roughly...
It got worse.
That's better. Oh.
Okay.
Started loud, and now it's low.
All right, so it's probably okay now?
No.
No.
It's still kind of low.
How about now?
Yeah.
Yeah, better.
Okay. So, initially we started hearing reports that there were multiple shooters at the Las Vegas Mandalay Bay incident. One of the things that caught my eye was radar evidence, which appeared to implicate three commercial helicopters flying under Maverick helicopters. Mm-hmm. And there were people online who had done some research into their radar activity and had reported some anomalies. So seeking first-order data, a group of us here in Phoenix petitioned the FAA via FOIA and also McCarran Airport for any records related to these aircraft flights. We got a peculiar response from the FAA. They alleged no evidence of these aircraft. And so with that reply, we rallied with airline aeronautical professionals here in Phoenix, speaking to public airports and military personnel and other folks who know this game. And they said, no, assuredly there are records of those flights. So we appealed to the FAA, citing the Title 14 rules and regulations, which require them to track aircraft in their Class B airspace, which is what McCarran Airport is. And then we also got records of correspondence, communications between these aircraft and the FAA, air traffic control. So from a number of different angles, we were able to prove to FAA that they assuredly did have records of these aircraft. They replied curiously that they could not release the radar records because they were part of an ongoing investigation by another federal agency. Upon further request and appeal, the final verdict coming out of the Washington, D.C. Headquarters of the FAA was that the FBI specifically was reviewing the aircraft data. Well, more specifically, the data procured in the FOIA request. So this is departure and arrival times of rotary aircraft and their primary radar returns. In addition to their secondary radar returns. So essentially their radar signature and all of their pilot information and all of that is currently being reviewed by the FBI as it's part of an ongoing criminal investigation. They have to date refused to release this data because they say it could jeopardize this investigation. Yet, as many of you may be aware, the FBI's mouthpiece in Las Vegas, Special Agent Aaron Rouse, is proclaiming that the investigation is wrapped up, there's no broader conspiracy, and they are adhering to the lone gunman theory of Stephen Paddock in room 32-135. So there's been an appeal filed with the FAA in D.C. That alleging that they're not exempt if it is true what Special Agent Rouse is saying, because the radar data couldn't possibly be part of any there wouldn't be a reason to withhold it if it is a lone shooter. And so, you know, both instances can't be true. Either Vegas is not telling us the truth, or the FBI, it's not factual that they need these things withheld. And so we're asking that they go ahead and push forward and release all of the radar returns so that the public can properly ascertain what happened in the skies over the Route 91 festival. We've also asked the FAA to act independently on this matter. So Title 14 gives the FAA the authority to delegate investigations to the FBI, but it doesn't require it. And it certainly, I don't think, requires them to withhold information. I think they do it as a courtesy. So we've provided the FAA with some additional information that's relevant, and that relates to the high incident project, which was a post alerted, made to the world on 4chan 3 weeks before the Vegas shooting, alleging that specifically Michael Chertoff and Sheldon Adelson were involved in a plot to commit a mass murder, or have in some way orchestrate a mass murder event with the intention of increasing regulations and requirements for security scanners in public buildings, hotels, high-rises, et cetera. Billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of contracts. And so that was the allegation. So FAA, FBI, and the DOJ have all been apprised of this 4chan post, which is a peculiar post. Through official channels, they've been apprised of this. They've also been made aware of footage which was captured the night of the shooting, which clearly shows anomalous flashes of light between the airspace of the Mandalay Bay and the Delano Hotel during the shooting, at a time when no secondary radar shows that aircraft should be there. The primary radar may show that there are vehicles there, helicopters, rotary aircraft, we're not sure, drones. We don't know what is in the air, but something is in the air. And these three different elements of our executive branch have all been alerted to this. So the hope is that with multiple tiers of government forced to look at this issue, it's going to be a little bit more challenging for them to suppress it. We don't know for sure what's happened, but it certainly seems as though at least three helicopters turned off their transponders about 15 minutes before the shooting. One of the closed-circuit highway cams that would have covered that airspace was strangely taken offline during the shooting also, so it failed to capture that portion of the airspace. Could be a coincidence. It could have been part of a broader conspiracy. The Nevada Department of Transportation has been made aware of this. The Las Vegas Review-Journal has been made aware of this. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department has been made aware of this. So a lot of folks are kind of aware of this. And here in Arizona, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office has been as well. And they actually helped us to get this information through a direct channel to the FBI, through a counterterrorism group here in Phoenix. So, you know, again, the hope, get more agencies involved, there's more accountability, and it, things may fare better for the truth movement as a result. Let's see, what else do we have on the helicopters? It's kind of a wait and see. We'll see what the reply is from FAA. There's additional stuff with the hotel and the body there. And so, real fast, last thing on the helicopters. If you guys want, go to Shepard and Bellis's IntelliHub. Search for FOIA Las Vegas. You'll find the post where you can see redacted versions of all of these filings, and you can read, you know, with specificity what's been said and who it's been said to. All right, so that's one front. It appears that the plotters may have used airspace and removed shooters from the hotel, because potentially a shooter in the hotel could have been thwarted by any one of the people carrying a concealed carry or an open carry in Nevada. Here in the West, there's a lot of us. So it looks as though the room was staged with a corpse, and this corpse was not Stephen Paddock. The body the pictures of the body that were released to the public on October 2nd show a decedent with detached earlobes. The decedent looks as though he may have been dead for several hours, but what is important is that his eyes are clearly brown and his earlobes are clearly detached. And these are two anatomical features which are distinct and unique, and in particular, these earlobes are irreconcilable with what is known to be Stephen Paddock online. The Las Vegas Police Department was FOIA'd through their PIO for a copy of those crime scene photos in April. They've yet to release them. They've released all kinds of data of body cams and other sorts of things, but they've yet to release official copies of those leaked photographs. The police department did confirm the validity of the photographs in a press conference. I think it was on the 3rd of October. So they've said that, yes, that was their decedent. But they're not releasing images now which could corroborate this problem with earlobes. The FIT report says that pictures were taken during the autopsy and radiographs were taken during the autopsy, yet those pictures and radiographs were not released in the autopsy report. And the Las Vegas Public Information, well, the Clark County Public Information Office has been queried about these images, and we're currently in negotiations with them as to whether or not they're going to release them or not. And that issue may have to go to court or something. We're not certain. But
okay, we're at the. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just about done.
You got a few more minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm wrapping it up. So basically, there's incongruencies with the body. The height of the body is wrong. The eye color is wrong. The American Association of Forensic Scientists have been alerted to this. Various medical examiners around the country, and a number of pathologists and pathology boards. We're going to probably take this another step and get the, called the Enterological Society, but basically ear, nose, and throat doctors, but the physicians in the country who are literally the experts on ears, both external and internal, and we're going to be asking them to weigh in on these earlobes and ears and try to sort out whether or not this is truly Stephen Paddock or not. And I'll just close with, there was one lateral view of the body released in the final FIT report. This lateral view is basically the perfect side shot that one would need to obscure the dimensionality of the ear. So you can't quite tell if it's detached or not. But curiously, that portion of the image appears to maybe have been doctored. It's heavily pixelated, and there's a tint or a color throughout that fraction of the head, which is interesting. It looks like, you know, there may be a coordinated effort here to cover things up. And that's where we're at. And so we're just kind of letting as many, congressional representatives and folks as we can to know about this in hopes that we get an answer. And we can maybe, if not bring justice for those that did die, stop future things like this from happening in the future. Oh, one last thing. It may be no surprise, but the various attorneys groups that are representing the victims are not interested in this information. They're interested in closing this case up with a settlement for both, you know, them and their clients.
Money.
Money. They don't want to hear it. And they've actually, we've found out through certain victims that we're working through that were there, they've been working with people to really push the single shooter narrative online. So there's a couple of the YouTube channels out there that are actually being paid by these attorneys' offices to promote the single shooter narrative. So I wanted to give you all an update and kind of let you know what's going on. We can't say definitively whether Chertoff and Adelson were involved in this, but we'd certainly like to know. And we've got a lot of people in the DOD and the FBI and the DOJ and local sheriffs and municipalities and medical groups and other folks taking a serious look at it. Because, of course, it's very serious. And that's all I got.
Thank you so much for that very concise and informative report, Xander. I'm going to unmute you very quickly here as we go into Q&A mode and allow people to press star 6 if they have a question or want to make a comment. I'd just like to ask you very briefly while we're waiting for the queue to form, where can we get more information on the Chertoff angle, the whole origin of that assertion and the thinking behind it?
Okay, if you will enter into your browsers 4chan and then High Incident Project, you
can
will
you
most
spell
likely
can,
High
can
Incident
spell it?
H-I-G-H and then Incident I-N-C-I-D-E-N-T.
No, I mean the URL. Can you spell it?
Oh, 4chan. The numeral 4. And then C-H-A-N,
uh-huh.
And just to briefly
okay.
let you guys know, 4chan is a way in which users can anonymously, oh dear. They
easy
can
for you to say.
Yeah, right. And they can post it without giving up their identity, but it is timestamped. And the way the 4chan system works, those timestamps are immutable. And so we can see that the timestamp for this alert was September 10th.
Okay, that's 4chan.com, is it correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you and here's another curious thing. Snopes has yet to even refute this one. Snopes, you know, they're quick to deny any allegations of conspiracy, and they can't even put this one to rest yet because so many players are involved. I think it could, you know, if something comes of this, it could, of course, tarnish their credibility if it's shown to be true. Anyways, it's an unproven claim, according to them. But that I would suggest going directly to the 4chan site. It's called 4chan and then Poll, P-O-L. That's their political subforum. And I'll tell you what, I'll just post to the conference call a link directly to these alerts.
Yeah, that would be very helpful if you'd send that to Craig so he can include it in the minutes, okay?
Absolutely, will do.
Thank you so much again. Okay, so let's go to Adam Ruff, who's got the first question. Go ahead, Adam.
Hi, I really have a comment. I didn't know if, Xander, if you're aware that Mike Adams, also known as the Health Ranger Online, did an acoustic analysis of the videos of the Las Vegas shooting, and he determined that there was more than one shooter using acoustical evidence from the videos themselves. So you might want to check that out, Mike Adams' acoustic analysis. And another comment is I did some research myself, and the amount of wounded and the amount of deaths in this shooting are way off of the national averages for gunshot wounds. In the country, if you're shot, the average chance of you dying is about 70%. So the deaths related to the amount of wounded are way off of the national averages. And it's just an interesting point that I researched, and you might want to check into that. But that's all I have to say.
Okay, let me reply. Thanks very much, Adam. So two things. Yes, I'm aware of the acoustics. It was actually one of the additional first things that got me interested in the case, and there's a few things out there that show that the cadence of the firing and the overlapping rates of fire cannot have been from echoes, and it couldn't have been from him holding simultaneous two different kinds of guns. So, yeah, there's that evidence as well. With respect to the deaths, if these aircraft or shooters from a far distance were shooting, that's about 700, 800 yards. That's really at the limit of the maximum effective range of .223, which is the caliber which was primarily used. And so what's happened is, I'm running on the premise these things might have been fired from aircraft. The bullets are losing so much kinetic energy by the time they're hitting people that they're not creating the large exit wounds that typically lead to death. Instead, the bullets are entering the tissue almost more like a pencil push. So a lot of the fatalities were head wounds. A lot of the folks that were hit in their torso or limbs, there's not the damage that you would anticipate from a close range shot. And I think that helps to explain that lower fatality number. But yeah, 400 plus people were hit, and thankfully only 58 dead.
Okay, next is Dick Atlee. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, I guess the basic question, which I've always wondered about, and this includes in 9/11 related things, is how much can you trust what you get back in terms of primary, secondary radar reports, especially when the long period is elapsed when things might be done to them. So that's one of the questions. The other one is, I went to 4chan.com, and in order to be able to use it, I have to agree that I desire to receive and view sexually explicit material. And they actively cooperate with law enforcement in all instances of suspected illegal use. So the question is, what do you do if you're not really that interested in seeing sexually explicit material?
Okay, I'll link you guys directly to the posts. There's adult material on there. There's propaganda stuff. There's racial stuff. There's bigotry. I mean, there's people. It's a forum where people can say anything they want anonymously. So I've done it again. So anyway, you can do it. I'll cut and paste the specific text in the link so you can read it without all the rest of the jazz. And then if you want to verify it, you can follow the link and it'll take you directly to where it was posted. Then as far as the data, at a minimum, whatever data is released, if any is released from FAA, it should match the data which was available on public sites such as Flight Radar 24. We contacted Flight Radar 24. Their servers are backed up out of country. They have that data saved and preserved, and they've actually been made explicitly aware of the importance of the October 1 aircraft data. And so they've disseminated that as well. And historically, they claim to have cooperated with American law enforcement on these issues. So, I mean, I trust the validity of that data. It's public information. And whatever the FAA ends up putting out, hopefully should, again, at least match that. But, you know, you're right. We wouldn't know for sure. We would have to trust whatever they put out. Part of that trust we hope to create by contacting the FAA directly instead of the FBI. We kind of blindsided the FAA with these requests and the specificity of the appeals. There are a lot of folks in FAA who, you know, they're patriots. They're either just good, hardworking federal workers, or maybe they're ex-military who have specific training in aircrafts and flight sciences. But, you know, I trust there's a lot of folks there who do care about what actually happened.
Okay, we're past time on this issue, but there are five people that still are in the queue. So I want to ask each of the five of you to keep your question very pointed. And Xander, if you would, please keep your response brief if you have one to make, okay?
Sure, will.
Marie Spike, go ahead.
Hi, I would like to know who specifically would have benefited from this kind of terrorist attack. Thank you.
The premise would be, in particular, that the manufacturers of these machines and those who are interested in profiting from the rollout of these machines across the country, not just in Vegas, would benefit. You know, we could only speculate on additional rationale, gun control, et cetera, disarming the population. Who knows?
That would be security scanners or something.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara Honegger.
Yeah, hi, Xander. This is really great work. Thank you so much for doing it all. It's a really patriotic contribution, and please keep it up. My question's simple. I think this is probably still rumor, but that's the basis for my question. Have you come across any evidence besides just the possibility that Crown Prince Salman of Saudi Arabia was either at the Mandalay? I understand that the Four Seasons that the Saudis own a good percentage of are outright were in the top floors, and there's been a claim that he was there. Have you found anything to that effect?
Okay, I found nothing to substantiate it. There was some footage of some people moving through a hotel casino lobby. That's been shown not to have been anybody Saudi. Though there was, interestingly, an Israeli individual there with an Israeli weapon. We do know that there was some action in Saudi Arabia shortly after this event with the overthrow of certain princes and whatnot, but nothing directly ties it back to Vegas that we know of. We don't know. And I can say with certainty that some of the information that's online right now about an extraction and these other things, when you actually look at the flight paths of these vehicles, they don't
they don't match with what they're describing as having happened. So I'm just going to say it is my opinion that those are disinformation claims.
All right, thank you.
James Hufford. James Hufford.
Hello, this is James, and Barbara asked my question, so
oh, great.
Move on.
Thank you, James. Okay, thank you very much. Sherry Aspen. Sherry Aspen.
Yeah, I will just I'll just move on. It just had to do with the rate at which the people were killed that would be exceeded the ability of the shooter to be able to perform that. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was covered. Thank you. And Michael Cook, last. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, thank you. Yes, Mike Cook. Awesome. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike Cook. Here. Great job, Xander, and everybody else involved in this. Super work. I think this is really low-hanging fruit. I don't know if you're aware of all of the other shooting locations around town. I mean, there were tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, at least several thousand people on the strip that night with cell phones and social media accounts. And they posted in Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and everything, photographs and videos of shootings all over town. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Mike, thanks. Fast comment. It does appear that there were teams on the ground firing, if not live ammo, not at people, blanks in different casinos to thwart law enforcement response. They tried to keep cops from getting to the 32nd floor for as long as possible is what it looks like to me. But we got to move on.
Yep. And thank you once again for a really excellent, informative presentation. We look forward to future updates when you have something else to report. Okay.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Okay. Time for our second agenda item. And that will be Lawrence Fine speaking on the 9/11 synthesis theory in the Pentagon, and Susan Sirpa will introduce him. So let me unmute those folks, and we can do that. I think we'll have to go into, yeah, let's see. Where are you, Susan? Oh, you got a fourth thing? No? Cheryl, can you find Susan Circle? To unmute her?
No, I don't see her on the list here anywhere. Susan, are you? Maybe we have to unmute everybody.
We're going to have to unmute everybody to find out. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Susan, we can't find you on the thing. Are you here, Susan Sirpa? Susan Sirpa.
Am I on?
Are you here, Susan?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but we're not able to find you for some reason on our list of people.
On Lorenzo's phone. We're together.
Lorenzo, okay.
Okay.
The 978 phone number.
Okay.
We have an effect right now. So.
All right, that's cool. So we're going to go into lecture mode then. Unmute the two of you, and Susan, please introduce Lawrence.
Okay. Am I on?
Yep.
Okay. Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce to the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference Lawrence Fine, otherwise known as Lorenzo. Lorenzo will be explaining his theories of what he thinks happened at the Pentagon based on the evidence he has been able to glean from various photos, aircraft knowledge, and research of other 9/11 scholars. To follow along, please bring up the site where he has compiled his synthesis at Lorenzo 9, that's LORENZONINE .wixsite, WIXSITE.com. And once there, you go to the 9/11 synthesis, the Pentagon Airborne Sortie.
Yeah, there's a link on the bottom of your agenda. You'll see it there under his item, okay? You can just click on the link. It'll take you there on the corrected agenda. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. So Lorenzo is a longtime student of 9/11. He brings his experience and knowledge to the effort, which includes his Air Force experience as a jet aircraft mechanic, followed by his contracting work as a building constructor. He also was an exhibits maintenance technician for the Boston Museum of Science. And in his retirement years, he continues to consult, design, and fabricate parts for an international manufacturer of isothermal calimeters. But most of all, he brings his intense curiosity combined with an innate ability to analyze how things work. So without any further ado, please bring up the site. And Lorenzo will tell us how, even with conflicting evidence and images of what happened at the Pentagon, what did hit the Pentagon? Was it a plane, a bomb, a missile, or could it be all of the above?
I don't know. 9/11 synthesis, the Pentagon Airborne Sortie. Please get your screen up. I'll be watching mine and reading off of it. The question about the lack of cohesive, recognizable wreckage is unprecedented in terra firma crashes, crash sites of Boeing 757s and 767s, and aircraft in general. There's always landing gear, engines, and remnants of any wing, fuselage, and other components formed from aluminum and other low-melting alloys that were not melted into pools in a post-crash fire. Looking at the picture in the upper left, looking at the picture in the upper left, there's a man with his back to us, and the famous question, where is the wreckage? And I've never had this question answered to my satisfaction. In the right-hand picture, I'm going to just read down the points. Witnesses testified that there was an aircraft that approached the Pentagon on a north path, not the path described in the official report where the downed light poles were. Some described a commuter-sized aircraft. Some testified to seeing a missile. Others testified to smelling cordite, and at least one testified to seeing an aircraft fly over the Pentagon moments after the explosion. And the question that forms the synthesis is, could they all be right? Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There are a number of links next down, the far camera, the repeat, and the far camera long clip, and a multiplex sync. The multiplex sync is a really good one to study because it really questions the authenticity of these videos. But it's pretty much all that we have to work with. So we're going to go down this, and I'll work on describing what I'm seeing here. In the first frame, this is Craig's cotton ball. The circled in black in the mid right is some white smoke, what appears to be white smoke. I have a couple of pictures just attached to either side of that of my favorite air-to-ground attack aircraft, the A-10 Warthog, which I have a model of in my hand right now. Notice in the second frame the intensity or the brightness of the fireball, the explosion, and then in the subsequent frames, how quickly this diminishes. And this can all be really well studied in the videos above. It appears as though the fireball subsides into nothing except for smoke within 5 or 6 seconds of the impact. Also, there's a link to the Citizens Investigation Team witnesses with the North Path testimonies, and their graphic is attached below. And seen opposing that is the official flight path. The last two items are Jamie McIntyre's report of no recognizable wreckage, and then Lieutenant Robert Medeiros, Arlington County, Virginia police officer, who also testified to not seeing any wreckage at the scene. I recommend going to pilots and watching their video, which you can find at the bottom here, Pilots for 9/11 Truth. Their flight data recorder. There were two anomalies that normally occur. Well, one is that if there were a hijack, the flight deck door would have been breached, and there was no sign of having been breached on their data recorder. And the altimeter snapback, which is an automatic adjustment when descending, that did not occur on the alleged aircraft. There are a few other statements that support a smaller, a more maneuverable, faster aircraft that's able to go faster. So that's pretty much the end of this. I would like to thank Richard Gage and Architects and Engineers, Dr. Griffin, Rob Balsamo, Craig Analdo at SIT, Dave Von Kleist, who produced In Plain Sight and Ripple Effect, Barbara Honegger, Craig McKee, Ken Freeland, Cheryl Curtis, and all the independent researchers and producers and the community which is working toward revealing the truth and seeking justice. And thank you very much for the opportunity to present this.
Wow. On time and under budget. Good for you. Thank you. Okay. So
thank you.
We will have now move into our Q&A if people have comments or questions to ask. So we'll get into that as quickly as I can get there and do it. So if you have a comment on what you've heard or a question, and please keep it brief because we have a very full agenda tonight, please star 6 your phone and you will be in the queue to ask Lorenzo a question. And I see Barbara's right there already, so go ahead, Barbara.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, Lawrence. Thank
hi, Barbara.
You so much. Yeah, great. Okay. Well, I just want everybody to know, and I'll be sending this after the call to the list, but it is simply not the case that there's no plane wreckage around the Pentagon. As you may know from behind the smoke curtain, it's further to the left, between 120 and 150 feet from the alleged impact point around the heliport and beyond the heliport going towards the wall. Also, in terms of Jamie McIntyre, he clarified what he meant, and I'm going to read it to you. He said, I was answering a question about a claim that the plane at the Pentagon crashed short of the wall. And he says, I saw thousands of pieces of the plane scattered over the heliport outside the Pentagon and photographed pieces of the wreckage. Many of these photos you can see. So people just need to know that it's not the case that there was no plane destroyed there. The question is, what plane was it? And I agree with you, it was in Flight 77, but that's my major point. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. There is, you know, what I consider to be parts strewn about, but in that first picture were the question of where's the wreckage, and that's centered pretty much on where the entrance hole was.
The alleged entrance hole.
The one in the video that we showed?
No, it's the alleged entrance hole. It's the official story.
I would say that was the entrance hole for whatever explosive device, you know, deep penetrating ordnance, was used. And again, the the idea of wreckage, for me, at the beginning, I thought I was real clear about saying cohesive wreckage or recognizable wreckage, and I do not recognize any of those parts as being cohesive or recognizable wreckage, which is what I would expect to see at a crash site.
That's correct, unless the plane was literally imploded or exploded, which has got to be the case because the most of the pieces were described as confetti-like.
Well, okay. That must have been another incident.
Yeah. We've got to move on, Barbara. Thank you for your comment. And Wayne Costa, you're next.
Yes, hello, Lawrence. So
howdy, Wayne.
I got a couple of quick questions here. First, in response to your where is the wreckage, the witnesses and the damage to the Pentagon first floor shows that the plane – everything is consistent with it with a 757 having hit and entered into the building. And over the course of the next couple of days, you can see that the workers are pulling out large engine pieces. There's landing gear, things like that end up in the A&E drive and also out outside the West Wing. I'm assuming that you had looked at that, but I also want to talk about the slide 5, which has a curious little red dot kind of in the middle in front of the heliport. And in that particular and if you look at the other sequences, you'll see that that's actually a glowing piece that's actually moving around, and it's consistent with a debris being moved through a trailing air mass caused by a plane approaching at high speed, and then the air having no place to go except against the wall, pushing the fireball up and away, as well as to the north, because that was a significant piece of the trajectory. Have you looked at both the debris, the aircraft debris, the parts of the landing gears that have been photographed in and outside the Pentagon, and have you reviewed the photographs to look at the impact of this trailing air mass? I guess many other things, but I'll just leave it at that. Over.
Okay. I have seen pictures of debris that was removed from both the lawn and from within the Pentagon, and I see parts, but I don't see anything that implies cohesive wreckage. And again, in my experience, I could never imagine that a plane would create a small hole the softest part of the plane, which would be the fuselage area, and would show no signs of the engines having impacted the outside of the building. And again, I have to rely on that first picture. That's the only evidence, and that's as far as I go. And I have seen all the pictures of parts and shredded and cut, and like Jamie McIntyre said, parts so small that they could be picked up and carried by one person. I've been to crash sites and never seen anything like that.
You do, of course, know that the first floor has an opening that's 100 feet wide, and it's only 42 feet between the engines and the.
Oh, that was after. That was after the collapse. But I'm talking about that.
No,
picture
No. The picture you're actually looking at. You're gonna. If you look at that and many of the companion photos, you'll see that there's a 90 foot opening with no columns.
You might see that, but I don't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Wayne, we can't get into a debate here again. If people want a debate, we're always willing to set one up for the future, but we can't do that right now. And so, Dick Attlee, you're next.
I think my problem is I couldn't get at the Virginia cops video, but that's probably some problem with my firewall. It doesn't show up.
Please copy down keep that. It's got good resources as far as those eyewitness corroborations of not seeing any cohesive or anything that resembled a wreckage of an aircraft.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Sherry Aspen.
Hello?
Sherry,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Sherry. I have a question. I didn't get a chance to really check out your website, but thank you for the link. And
How come April Gallup isn't part of your website? Didn't she crawl out of that hole with her baby and also went to court and testified that she didn't see any sign of a plane? And also, what puzzles me is about the engines. The engines of those jets are like titanium, I believe, and they're like 10 or 12 tons, and they're pretty big. Where could they be if there was really a jet engine that went there? I don't think those could just disintegrate. So that's all I have to ask. Thank you.
The first part of that question is about April Gallup, and of course I'm aware of her testimony. My focus is on the mechanics, the systems, you know, the airborne. You know, essentially, what I'm interested in is selecting eyewitness testimony that support the scenario of an attack aircraft and a missile, especially with the flyover. The
Engines.
Oh, thank you. Engines are massive. They are not. They don't fall apart on impact. They will. The cowling will get battered, and parts of the exterior, mechanics, the casing would be damaged. And if they were to strike something that was, immovable object. They could be damaged a lot worse, but there was no sign of the engines having damaged in that first picture. I could see the facade damaged. I could see signs of an entrance hole, but I couldn't see the landing gear, the engines, and again, like Jamie McIntyre said, there's no cohesive record. There's nothing that would suggest that an aircraft crashed. A Boeing 757 crashed at that site.
Okay. Tim Michael?
Okay. Tim Michael here. Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that Norman Mineta gave some testimony saying that the plane was 50 miles out, 30 miles out, and when it got down to 10 miles out, a young man also asked the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Well, that was really damning testimony by Norman Mineta, implicating Dick Cheney in the execution of the 9/11 plot. But what we never knew is that in the 9/11 commission report, his testimony was eliminated, and in place of it, it had something that went something like this. At some time between 10:10 and 10:15, a military aide told the vice president and others that the aircraft was 80 miles out. Vice President Cheney was asked for authority to engage the aircraft. His reaction was described by Scooter Libby as quick and decisive at about the time it takes a batter to decide to swing. The vice president authorized fighter aircraft to engage the inbound plane. He told us he based his authorization on earlier conversation with the president. The military aide turned around a few minutes later, probably between 10:12 and 10:08.
Tim. We're all pretty familiar with this, and I've got to cut you off here because we're short on time, and you got to make your question more pointed. What is it that you want to say?
The question I have is, it would appear that the government does not want people to talk about a plane impacting the Pentagon. And I just said the question is that how thoroughly have you really examined this? Because I think that it needs to be examined extremely carefully, because a plane impacting the Pentagon implicates the vice president. A plane flying over it does not. And so I wanted to ask, how thoroughly have you investigated this, and do you intend to do further investigation to try to nail this down really precisely?
The idea of a plane impacting or a plane attacking the Pentagon or flying over, that all implies anything that approaches, like Susie says, nothing should have gotten there. Nothing should have attacked the Pentagon, first of all. And whatever it was, whether it be an aircraft which crashed there, which I have seen absolutely no evidence of in the spot that we're talking about, the famous picture of the lawn with the man with his back to us, centered pretty much with a diesel generator and the wire spools to the right, and section of chain link fence allegedly taken out by an engine, which I've never seen. There's no evidence of a plane having struck that I've seen. Now, the vice president, I'm very familiar with the Norman Mineta testimony, and the vice president is implicated in either case, in both cases, although I have no confidence that there was any aircraft that crashed into the Pentagon. I am pretty much convinced with my select eyewitnesses that this is a viable scenario to have an attack aircraft, whether it be an A-10 Warthog or any other aircraft that would have been seen approaching on the north path that would have done that loop, that descending spiral, that would have gunned his engines and banked to the right and climbed after the witnesses saw it pass over the Sitco and the Navy annex. Yeah, there's an awful lot that leads to this conclusion for me. And they both, no matter what happened there, it implicates the vice president.
Okay. And finally, Dwayne Dietz.
This is Dwayne Dietz.
Hi, Dwayne.
I wanted to make a comment that pertains to some analysis that Wayne Costi has done recently. Although he spoke a little bit earlier with a question, I wanted to bring to your attention his analysis about the security camera. So you made reference to what you had seen in the security camera, and he has recently done an analysis of security cameras. He's actually got it in Chapter 11 of a very long analysis he has, and David Chandler did the narrative of this. It's at the link is 911speakout.org/Wayne-Costi, and I would strongly recommend you look into that so you can see what he's been able to find. The information in the security camera is extremely important, and I think anyone who makes reference to what the security camera shows you should be aware of what he's come up with. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very aware of I have been through that report, through that paper, and it's a very interesting and, like you said, a very long report. There are a lot of questions that we have about certain images in that, and that's where I'll have to leave it. The authenticity of certain parts of those images. So what we're dealing with here is something that's been released, similar to what has been released to pilots, which is data which is filled with anomalies, things that should have happened that didn't happen, images that may have been taken out or even added or masked. So there's too many questions that we have about the authenticity of these videos. I can only use those videos for the pre and post explosion, but not to describe anything that may have approached the Pentagon other than a missile, because the exhaust note of the exhaust tone of solid fuel rockets is generally a gray or white. If there were a damaged engine on a jet aircraft, you would have seen dark brown or blackish smoke in that place.
Okay. Well, Lorenzo, thank you for a very concise report, or maybe we should say a theory.
Putting together a lot of reports.
Yeah. And we look forward to, future possibly debate, if you're interested in that sort of thing. But in any case, future revelations that you might have to share, okay?
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Ken. And thanks again for the opportunity to present tonight.
No problem. Great. So now we're ready for our third item on the agenda. And this is a motion made by Cheryl and and Barbara. So I guess for the sake of formality, the motion should be made at this time and seconded, and then we will move into debate, okay? So Cheryl or Barb, whichever of you prefers, please make the motion and the other can second it, and then we'll move forward.
Okay, I'll make the motion. I'm moving that Wayne Costa be removed from the teleconference call, listserv, and listserv due to his flagrantly false and unsupported accusations.
Okay.
Did you want me to
Thank
go
you.
Further, Ken?
No, no, not yet, not yet. Did you,
okay.
You just need the motion to debate.
Okay.
And then, Barbara,
Got
do
it.
You want to second it? Barbara Heidegger?
Is she muted?
No, she, oh, God. Everybody seems to be muted. I thought we ended the Q&A. There we go. Okay, Barbara, you want to second it?
We need to read the motion so that people know what's being said.
No, ma'am. The motion is to remove Wayne from the teleconference. The rest of it is an argument, and that won't be part of the motion. But that, you'll have an opportunity to make that argument as soon
All right,
as we
Ken.
Get the motion on the table, okay?
All right. Cheryl and I are making that motion together, and we're looking for a second.
No, you don't need a second. You can second her motion. That's acceptable.
Thank
now,
God.
Now the motion is
Thank
on the table,
God.
And since
all right,
the
second thing that isn't what we were planning, but I'll
yeah, since Cheryl made the motion, she will have the opportunity to make the first argument, and then we will go back and forth and see who wants to speak. Okay, so go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay, so I'm just going to start out by reading what we put into the minute,
Fuck
into the agenda.
The back and forth.
Whoa. Somebody's got background noise here. Can you all mute yourselves, please? *6 if you've got background noise going on.
I thought I was muted. This is
no,
a bullshit party.
No problem. go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay, so Barbara and I basically are making the motion that Wayne be removed from the teleconference calls and the listserv due to his flagrantly false and unsupported accusations on the call against Craig McKee, his blind CCing of an email to Craig repeating these false and inflammatory statements to a dozens of 9/11 Truth Movement activists without Craig's knowledge, his refusal to retract these false statements on the subsequent call, his intentional and inflammatory creation of a new website with a name mirroring Craig's own Truth and Shadow site, mocking Craig's research, and his attempt on the call, all recorded, to extort Craig that he take actions demanded by Wayne in order for Wayne to remove the mocking website from the Internet.
Yeah, you heard it, but
I don't know, Barbara, if you want to add anything.
I just heard it.
Together.
Yeah, Barbara, if you want to chime in, you may.
Well, I think Cheryl and I would like to both comment on this to begin. Cheryl, do you want to go first?
Cheryl did. Cheryl,
no, she
gave you the floor.
Simply read the motion. She simply read the motion, Ken.
You don't need
the motion
to
is
do that.
To remove Wayne. It's not the rest of it, okay? The rest of it is an argument.
Of course it is the rest of it. The motion
no, come on,
is
don't,
the
motion. Please don't argue with me, Barbara. Please.
Well, why are you arguing
say
with me?
Okay, guys, let's.
I'm not
I'll
arguing
make a
with
comment.
You. I'm telling
I will
you
comment.
To say what you want to say right now if you wish to say something, okay?
Cheryl first, and then I will. Thank you.
Well, I think many people were on the call last month, but if you weren't, Wayne had put out these emails with lies about Craig in them, saying that he frequently said he had apologized for not having any evidence on the Pentagon, and he was personally attacking Craig. And then on the call, we had said either prove it or not, but own up and apologize and retract the statement if you can't prove it. Well, he couldn't prove it, and so then he said he apologized for it, but to go to this website that he created that's just like Wayne, just like Craig's, with this title, truthandshadows.net instead of .org, I think what Craig's is, it was a mocking website, and when you go there, there's no apology. He said the apology was there, but it's not there. It's more criticism. So I feel like he's wasted our time. He's been insincere, and I think that kind of behavior shouldn't be allowed on the listserv and on our call.
Okay, now, am I on now, Bob?
Yep.
Yes, Barbara.
All right. I want everybody to understand that from my point of view, and the reason that I agreed to do this with Cheryl is
Hang
because...
On, I'm gonna cut you off for just a second while I go into Q&A mode here. I will unmute you, and you can continue.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. All right, I just want everybody to know that I agreed to do this with Cheryl. And I want everyone to know that from my point of view, this is not, underlined not, about any disagreement on the content of the evidence that is presented by anyone, on any debate over the content of the evidence, not at all. This, in my mind, is about a gross violation of simple ethics and, in my opinion, legality. I believe that Wayne Coste intentionally defamed Craig McKee, and that he did so, it's clear to all of us, without having actually gone back. He did it from his memory, without having actually gone back and looked at all of those years of audio tapes, which he said he'd do later when we, you know, brought him on the carpet for what he had claimed that was grossly and self-evidently false. So he knew that he couldn't support it when he said it, and in my opinion, he knew it was false. But what's really egregious is what he did afterwards. He effectively mocked and, in the last call, tried to extort Craig McKee. This is so beyond the pale and over the line, I believe that he should be removed from the call and the lister. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to go next to Wayne, who I presume would like to respond to these allegations. So let's unmute Wayne.
Yeah, go ahead, Wayne. Thanks. Yeah, thanks. I'm assuming you can hear me now.
Yep.
Yeah. So I basically have to agree with some pieces of what Barbara and Cheryl said, mechanics of it, but in order for this to go forward. First of all, talk about wasting time. We've wasted I don't know how many hours on this in the last 2 months going over personal bickering on this call. It seems to be a very inappropriate place to be doing this. A waste of the time of all these
people.
Is this
a point of order, Ken?
No,
point of order. Yeah, okay. Point of order.
Hold on.
Point of order. Point of order takes precedence. Go ahead, Cheryl. What's your point of order?
I think what Wayne is saying doesn't really deal with what we're talking about now. He's off point talking about wasting time on the.
You brought up wasting time.
Okay. You may be right about that, Cheryl, but because of the serious nature of what we're dealing with here, I'm going to give Wayne more license than usual to say what he wants to say, okay? Please indulge me. Go ahead, Wayne.
Thanks.
But try to keep it brief, okay, because we other people are going to want to participate in this debate, okay?
Well, it's not a debate. It's a court.
No, it's a discussion. I should say a discussion.
All right.
Okay.
Well, you can call it what you want, but you need a little bit more background. First of all, one of the complaints that we have is that I responded to an email that was forwarded to me that in which Craig is calling me a disinfo person. Right. I did reply back as a BCC. It's a courtesy not to let everyone know, keep people out of taint. That's what I've been told. So yes, indeed, I did. And in that, I said, Craig, you frequently state that you don't have that you frequently apologize for not having enough evidence. I wasn't able to find exactly those phrases, but I found very similar things which are on the discussion about Roosevelt Roberts. It's from the teleconference listserv in which he basically uses those words. You can find it in the Roosevelt Roberts section of the website, which has been moved because of the pushback about having used truthandshadows.net. It's been moved to dumptheshadows.org, dump-the-shadows.org. I've moved it so to avoid this particular problem with the naming convention, which appears to have been a lightning rod that I did not expect. I expected questions about whether or not the stuff I was posting is accurate, but I wasn't expecting the pushback about the truthandshadows.net. So remember, I'm responding to this whole thing started because Craig sends to other people, not to me, calling me a disinfo agent. And in fact, that's in his most current article up on truthandshadows.com. If you want to go see it, I'm up there with the disinfo people. And so we're, if we're into a name calling world here, apparently, and I'm not allowed to respond. So I responded because of the format of this teleconference. When this was brought up in July, I said I would look at it in August, and when it came to August, the only thing I was allowed to do is say yes or no. Do I apologize or not? But it's a whole lot more nuance, and in fact, there's a whole lot more stuff, and I didn't want to get into the is what he said about Roosevelt Roberts and needing more, you know, wishing he had better witnesses for flyover adequate. So I basically said, well, I'll apologize, but I'll take one of his interviews that Cheryl did, and I'll annotate it and show where Craig is either has no backup, is making stuff up, or is speaking incorrectly. And he should have been doing this long enough, so he should know what the evidence shows and should be making this stuff up. As a matter of fact, in this most current, and this is very relevant to this particular discussion, and this because
your law.
I am in the most current article. He talks about the long pole hitting Lloyd England's cab. That's front center in the first picture. He calls me a disinfo person when in fact there's no evidence that Lloyd England ever said that. I have a $200 challenge now up on dumptheshadows.org to anyone who can show me where in those the material.
Point of order.
Point of order. Right. Okay. Who's raising the
it's
point of
Craig.
Order, please?
Craig.
Yeah, go ahead, Craig.
This has nothing to do with anything. This is some – Wayne's put up a new – is offering a reward for something, and it's got nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight.
Okay. I'm going to say that at this point it does seem to be getting away from the question of whether or not the allegations on the basis of which people are wanting to remove Wayne from the teleconference are valid or not. So I would ask you to stay closer to that, Wayne, and also to keep your comment as brief as you can. I will give you another chance to speak, okay, but I really want you to give other people a chance to, say their piece as well, okay? So go ahead, but try to keep it relevant to what's been stated, the charges, basically, okay?
Okay, well, here's my next statement I'm going to say is I'm going to make a motion that the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference will henceforth, including now, not expend teleconference time on interpersonal issues. That's my motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
We have a motion on the floor.
That's correct. There is a motion on the floor. I think your motion is out of order, Wayne. That's really not what we're here to discuss at this time. If you want to make that an agenda item for a future teleconference, assuming you're still part of the teleconference, you can do that. But right now we're dealing with this question of your participation in teleconference, so everything has to be pertinent to that for the time being. Okay?
Okay, then let me do it another way. I'm making a motion that we table this permanently, this discussion permanently, because it's a waste of 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference time.
There's a motion on the floor.
No, that's a relevant motion, and the motion is to suspend what's the word?
Table, right?
No, it's not table. He doesn't mean table. He means to postpone indefinitely this question. That's the technical term for it. So is there a second to the motion to postpone this matter indefinitely?
We already have a motion on
this.
This
is a motion. No, he's absolutely entitled at any point in time. Anybody can ask to table postpone any item, Barbara. Come on, get your Robert's Rules book out. Now, Who would like to second this motion, if anyone? Would anyone like to second the motion to postpone indefinitely this agenda item? Hearing no second,
is everybody Is everybody muted?
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yes, everybody is
Thank
muted.
You.
We have to unmute. Sorry. Thank you for the reminder. Jeez. Yeah. Okay. So, would anyone like to second the motion to suspend to postpone indefinitely this agenda item?
Yes. This is Dwayne. I second it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's been moved and seconded to indefinitely postpone this item from the agenda. That's a debatable motion. So we will now go back into Q&A mode, and anybody who wishes to speak on this question of postponement. Sorry about that. Okay, so star 6 if you would like to speak to the motion, just the motion to postpone indefinitely this agenda item. Star 6. Sherry Aspen, you're first. Yeah, yes, Cheryl.
Yeah, I for some reason I'm doing
driver.
Star 6, but it's not working, so I would like to comment at the end also.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're always on, so that's why.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah, you just say you want to speak, and we'll
okay.
I'll make sure to give you a chance. So okay. Sherry Aspen, you're up first.
Okay, is this for my comment, or is this to say I don't think we should table it? I think we should get this over with, but I also
okay.
have a comment.
Well, we're only speaking right now to the question of postponement. No other question
yeah,
is
I
relevant
I
right
do
now.
I vote no to not postpone to get.
Well,
not
all right. So you're against it. Okay, thank you, Barry
okay.
Zwicker.
Yes, Barry Zwicker here, and I've been involved with meetings for 45 years or so, and I'm not going to speak, of course, the original motion. Speak to the motion to table. This is obstructionism of an absurd type. This is the kind of thing that is done by people who don't know better or people who want to confuse and want to divide, want to cause chaos. It's not a constructive motion at all. And the motion to table would prevent democratic discussion of the motion already on the floor originally. So this is really absurd, and it's disgusting. And I have never seen anything like it for years and years and years. That's all I would say at this moment.
Okay, Wayne. Or no, I'm sorry, Wayne. I can't call on you. You made the motion to table.
Okay.
So we have to move on. Barbara, you're next.
Yeah, hi. This is Barb. I wholeheartedly endorse what Barry Zwicker just said. And he's one of our senior eminences. That's all I have to say.
Bill Walt.
So are we voting on the motion to table?
No, we're not voting. Did you have a comment or
no
to
comment.
Make on? Okay, thank you. Dwayne Dietz.
This is Dwayne. The reason I'm recommending that we postpone it, or in fact I seconded it, is because the original motion I think was out of order. And I was not able to say point of order because I was blocked out of speaking. The reason I thought the original motion was out of order is because the only motion presented verbally was a very short one, about one, maybe two sentences long, that said it was because of, I wrote it down somewhere, but it was short.
Okay,
saying
yeah, but right now we're just talking about the motion to postpone. Okay, so you should speak to that. Okay.
But my way of doing that,
uh-huh.
because I wasn't able to raise the point of order. In other words,
okay.
the
okay.
order that was brought to the floor and seconded did not include all the verbiage that's written down, and I tried to make a point of order. So we ended up with.
I read the whole thing that was written down. So
but that was after That was after it was seconded.
Yeah, but because the motion is simply that Wayne be removed from the teleconference, okay? The explanation...
The thing is that I will say the explanation is so multi-points.
We're not debating that right now. We're just debating whether or not we should take up this motion tonight. Okay, that's all we're debating at the moment.
I know. So my only mechanism is to second Wayne's motion to postpone it indefinitely.
I see. Because you disagree with the original motion. Okay, I understand. Okay, you said that. Thank you. All right, Frank Tilopko.
I want to call the question.
You want to call the question, but there's two other people in the queue right now to speak. Do you wish to preclude their right to speak by calling the question?
Well, can I come back on after they've spoken?
Well, after they've spoken, the question will be done, so it'll be time to vote. But
okay.
You can call the question now and preclude their right to speak if that's your choice, and then we'll take a vote on whether we want to.
Let them speak.
Okay.
Let them speak.
All right, Tim Michael.
Okay, Tim Michael here. I've done an extensive reading on some of the comments and back and forth on Truth and Shadows between various speakers. And in my opinion, what this is that something is something that has spilled over from the comment section of Truth and Shadows into the 9/11 and other deep state teleconference. So I would probably say that I would be in favor of indefinitely suspending the motion at this point.
Okay, and thank you. Cheryl, you wanted to say something?
Yes. I also wholeheartedly support what Barry said, and I think that Wayne obviously is the one who's the target of this motion, and he could lose his rights to be on the call, so it only makes sense that he would ask us to postpone it, because he doesn't want to deal with the fact that he's lied to us, lied about Craig, and that's what we're talking about here, that's unacceptable behavior on the call, and I think this motion that he just made to postpone it demonstrates more of that, his lack of sincerity and taking responsibility for what he's done. So, no, I do not favor tabling it at all. Or postponing it.
Okay, and...
And Craig, too, if I can just throw a quick one in there. Yeah, I just want to echo that and echo what Barry said. The idea that somebody who is the subject of the motion would make a motion to postpone just seems kind of crazy. But I would just echo what Barry said.
Okay, and Wayne, I'm going to give you the last word because I really didn't give you an opportunity in the first place to explain your motion, so you can argue for it here, and then we'll vote. Go ahead.
Yes, I think it's inappropriate, as Tim pointed out, that this is a spillover of a long-running debate that's been acrimonious back and forth that has been going on for a long time, most of which I'm not a party of. I'm being called very bad names by other people that are supporters of followers, I guess, and petition signers of Craig's, possibly even member of his Facebook group, but they're too embarrassed to show who they are. So I think it's really an inappropriate motion to be rigging this kind of stuff up on this teleconference.
Can I make a comment?
No, you can't, Cheryl. Unless it's about process, but you can't make a comment about the issue.
Okay.
Okay. So. That ends the discussion on this question. We will now take a vote. All in favor of the motion to postpone indefinitely this matter, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
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 Okay, the nays have it, so the question will not be postponed indefinitely. So we will now go back into Q&A mode, and anyone who has not yet had a chance to address the main issue is welcome to press star 6, and you will be given an opportunity to speak to the question of the main question here. Okay? Barbara, I think you already spoke. You were one of the motion makers. Barry, okay. Barry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be brief. To expel anyone from any organization is, of course, an extreme sanction. I belong to a writer's organization that's been meeting for 11 years, and in that time, just two persons have been asked to leave. It seems to me obvious that Mr. Gosty has committed several wrongs. They're laid out in the motion, more than one of which alone would warrant this extreme sanction. His actions are not errors or honest mistakes. They are aggressive, dishonest initiatives on the face of them, calculated to do harm to Craig McKee, but which also sow harmful dissension within the ranks of the participants in these teleconferences and indeed 9/11 truthers in general. So this is a deserved sanction, and the sooner it's passed, the better.
Adam Ruff.
Hi, this is Adam Ruff. I just wanted to, again, echo what Barry Zwicker just said. And I'm in favor of removing Wayne, and that's all I have to say.
Sherry.
This is Sherry from San Diego, and I'm kind of new to the call, and I listened to the archive of the last call to get prepared for this call, and there's no offense that I say this, but coming in, I'm a teacher, okay, so I'm still teaching, and I teach little kids from grade kindergarten through fifth grade right now, and that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of my children, that I have to remind how to get along, which is what you're supposed to learn in kindergarten. And it's just, I heard a bunch of sighs coming from each person, Craig and Wayne, that were so stress-laden. The stress was palatable. It was just not even healthy, the stress that we're going through. That we are all incredibly unique people on this call. You know, I'm honored to be on with all of you. And we have to remember that what's most important is unity. And not fighting amongst each other. And you know, remember Bambi's rule. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. We've got this 9/11 grand jury petition going, you know, that's being incredible lawyers. And that's where our energy needs to be. If you added up all the energy you've spent on debating the Pentagon and making websites to counteract each other and all the other stuff that I don't even know about and don't even really want to know about, think of all, if you put all that energy into supporting the grand jury petition, to getting the word out about it, if we all wrote a letter to Amy Goodwin, I mean, all the things that we could be doing instead of this, you know, because that grand jury petition holds the key to not only 9/11 truth, but restoring our republic, quit funding all the terrorists, and you know all the rest. It really leads to world peace. So what we're doing is, you know, we're fantastic people. We've lost friends. I've lost family members over this. They think I'm a nutcase, you know, of people, the cognitive dissonance. And I see the stuff closing in on me right here in Oceanside, California. Okay, we had an Israeli sniper come to a church here, the New Song Church, big youth church. So it's closing in fast.
Okay,
and
Sherry,
we need
Okay, your comments are very interesting, but we have to keep it limited.
We should just get along with each other, and I don't think anybody should be thrown out. I think people should apologize and then maybe just don't debate that subject anymore, and let's move forward doing something positive like the lawyers committee. So that's
okay.
All I have to say.
I got it.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. And Dwayne Dietz.
Okay, this is Dwayne. As I kind of said before, I thought that the motion was effectively everything that was written down, even though I hear later that the motion is only to throw them out. But what I'll do, therefore, I found myself, when I read everything, I basically didn't know what the issue was. And I'll read the first line that I came across, which I guess is the issue. And it says, due to his flagrantly false and unsupported accusations. Okay, that is a judgment call. I believe it is a wrong judgment call because I have a different opinion of the majority of the people here. And so the way I perceive this whole thing is it's ganging up on someone because you don't agree with them. I think that's wrong. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, and Tim Michael.
Yes, as I said earlier in the motion to postpone, I think this kind of spilled over from some of the heated discussions that were going on Truth and Shadows. And I do think that Wayne kind of got pinned into a corner, and like anything cornered, he tried to defend himself. As I said before also, Norman Mineta's testimony was eliminated from the 9/11 Commission report. It was also eliminated from the congressional video record. And it suggests that just simply saying that a plane impacted the Pentagon doesn't imply that you're a disinformation artist or that you're trying to support the official story, because supporting Mineta...
That's not what this is about.
Hang on. I'm getting to what it's. I'm going. And so the thing is that Wayne Costi on several of these sites, and I've read all the comments, is that this has been a constant pressure. It's been a constant pressure suggesting that he is a disinformation artist, that he is maybe a plant working for the government, and I'm sure this has grated on him. He's put an enormous amount of time into doing his analysis of the Pentagon, and I think it should be, you know, respectfully looked at, and I think that it shouldn't be that this group should not simply throw him aside because he disagrees with what the majority believes is what happened. If the lawyers committee is going to win, they have to have accurate evidence. If they don't, they will lose. And so I don't think there is any reason to remove him. I think there is reason to caution him and say that, you know, and there really should be rules of order here in which you do not disparage somebody else. And I agree with that. And I think that's the remedy that should be put forward here. Okay.
Do you wish to propose an amendment? A substitute motion? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's what needs to be done. We need to have a code of conduct that needs to be in place, and everybody has to adhere to it. And if they fail to adhere to it, then we can have charges like this brought up.
We have that already. We just sorry, this is Craig. We just adopted that last month.
Okay.
So
well,
you're not allowed to say things.
But it was a rule relevant to the question of accurately representing things. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't want to bring up another motion at this point. I'm just saying that
okay.
We need to consider all perspectives on what happened at the 9/11, and we shouldn't shut down and just eliminate all alternative ideas.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. We got that. Thank you. Dick Atley.
Okay. This is Dick. I'm very troubled by this. I can see why everybody'd be upset about the described behavior. I do remember back in the early 90s, I was running an actual real listserv list of teachers in Maryland, and one of them really became almost dangerous. And I after talking to him endlessly, I finally had to cut him off. But in this case, I don't know who it was who was just speaking, but I agree very, very much with the idea that this was became an inflammatory situation where people began to get out of hand. And I hadn't heard, somehow I missed the idea that a code of conduct had been passed, but if it was passed last month, a lot of behavior that's being discussed here occurred prior to that. And I think it's much better to try and raise the issues that are being raised here explicitly and tell somebody, okay, here are the problems we have, and we will vote to remove you or hold a vote to remove you if this continues or something like this is repeated.
Do you wish to make a substitute motion, Dick?
No, I'm just saying that I'm going to vote against this because I think it's probably a bad idea to fall into the cognitive infiltration concept that we have to start accusing people of being disinformation agents if something they say seems to be congruent with the official story. To me, that's a problem.
Okay, thank you. Peter Ketchum?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Oh, you're coming through really garbled. Can you try it again? Peter Ketchum.
Yes, can you hear me?
Okay.
So I think Wayne's behavior has been damaging and disruptive, and I think Cheryl and Barbara's motion should be passed. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. And Andy Steele.
Did you call my name? There was a voice
Andy
that
Steele.
Spoke over.
Andy Steele.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, everybody. Typically, I follow these calls on the archives because I'm usually working on my show at this time. I just want to remind everybody that this is not an issue over what Wayne believes or what Craig believes. I mean, this was an issue where somebody directly lied about what somebody said, which is pretty damaging in our business, because if you're a researcher, then you go about your work with people, you know, believing your facts, and you back it up with research. And if you claim that somebody repeatedly apologized for having no evidence, obviously that's an attack on their credibility. Regarding what's being said on the internet, whenever you take a position on something, and as particularly as controversial as what happened at the Pentagon, you know that there are going to be people out there who are going to criticize you, and that just comes with the business. I know there's going to be people probably criticizing me out there on the internet when I do my show. I don't care about that, but the real issue is that someone evoked this call to claim that somebody said something that they did not. So, again, you know, as David Chandler would say in his video, I didn't hear a whoops there. This is something that could have very easily been put aside by Wayne when he was called out on it. Because sometimes people get heated. Sometimes, you know, people will have a different memory of an event. And then, you know, if he looked through the archives and saw that Wayne or that Craig had not made that claim, he could say, look, yeah, I was mistaken on that, and then life could go on. But rather than doing that, he doubled down and took the route that he did with creating the website. So I will be voting in favor of removing Wayne tonight.
Okay.
It's Craig, so too. I'd like to get in whenever.
No, Craig, you've already spoken, Craig.
No, I haven't.
You haven't spoken on the main issue? Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay. I would just like to echo what a couple of recent commenters have said about the fact that it has nothing to do with what anybody believes. It's a mischaracterization to say that you shouldn't boot someone off the call because of what they believe. This is clearly not what's at stake. And as to the whole issue of what did his behavior take place before we had a code of conduct, I mean, there's two things I would say about that. One is you shouldn't need a code of conduct to deal with blatant lies that somebody tells. That should be kind of a given as far as I'm concerned. But even if you do that, even if you sort of accept that, the fact is that he's actually tonight, if people took note of this, he actually more or less repeated the lie. So even though he said last month I apologize and didn't actually give any specific about what it was he was apologizing for. He came on tonight and he said that I had apologized, that the question was whether I had frequently apologized for not having enough evidence, which of course was not the point. He said it was I had apologized for having no evidence at all. And then he implied that though there were similar phrases to this that were true. So he kind of actually backtracked from last month when he was more or less saying, you know, okay, he didn't actually say that. So he's kind of going back towards saying, but I said something close to that. So, you know, and I think that's very clear that he's not attempting to sort of rectify this. He's doubling down again. And I would point out, too, that the website that he's created, which is directly connected to this issue and this supposed apology, so it is kind of connected to what we're talking about. He says things on there that are, he refers to the original email where he said that I said this as being an innocuous email exchange, or innocuous, which again sort of shows that he's not taking this very seriously at all. He also says on there that I have a policy that I will never attempt to present any evidence to support my hypothesis. I mean, that's another absolute false statement, that I have a policy and I won't talk about evidence. So this has all been done after the whole issue was brought to the teleconference. So he's kind of adding to the whole thing. He's not trying to resolve it, and it's disingenuous to suggest that we've wasted all this time on this issue and how terrible it is, and we should table it because we shouldn't be wasting time on it. There's one person responsible for that time being wasted. Now, I want to just make sure I kind of jotted a couple of notes down here, and I want to make sure that I don't forget. He also threw in a shot about the fact that people in the No 757 Facebook group are too embarrassed to say who they are. I don't think that's going to get any sympathy from anybody. In fact, there is a group that was formed directly to rebut the group that I formed, and it's also a closed group, so you know, you could make the same accusation there. Anyway, I'm sure that I'm sure. Oh yeah, the last thing I did want to mention was the suggestion that this had spilled over from Truth and Shadows. That's not the case. What it was that I was involved in an email sort of chain with some people discussing the Pentagon, including Dwayne, and you know, Wayne learned of it, and then, you know, the rest is history. So it wasn't spilling over from the comment section. In fact, the comments that I think are being referred to.
Is there, Frig?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear
you're
now.
Still up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just thought you weren't hearing me or something. What? Who's talking?
No, this is Cheryl. For a moment, I thought we couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay. All right, so I kind of lost track of what I was saying there, but I'm not sure if it's, you know, this is the last thing I'll throw in, is that the suggestion from Dwayne that we're ganging up on Wayne is pretty ironic. You know, and the fact that Wayne just today changed the URL of his of his website to Dumping the Shadows is a pretty small concession on his part. So I just would, I guess, echo what I've heard from Barry and Andy and Peter. And I guess that's all I've got.
Okay. So that exhausts our queue.
And I think Barbara would like to speak.
No, Barbara has already spoken, just as you have and just as Wayne has. So you folks don't get a second chance.
Okay.
Because otherwise we're going to be at this all night, because then there'll be another back and forth and then another back and forth, and we won't get to the end of it. So it's time to vote. The motion on the floor, which has been seconded and debated, is to remove Wayne Kosky from the teleconference. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oh, whoops, I got to unmute everybody. Can't have a voice vote without unmuting everybody. Okay, well, it looks like you're still muted.
I said it twice. You ignored me.
You're still muted, Lynn Gladbury, just so you know, in case you choose to vote. You have to unmute yourself, I believe. And looks like maybe
Tim, this is Sheila Casey.
Everybody's unmuted.
Sorry, Ken, I'm sorry. Sheila alerted me that she was trying to make a comment, and I was sort of waiting for an opening to mention that to you, and then I sort of forgot to do it. So she did ask, she did indicate several minutes ago that she wanted to make a comment
right.
as well.
Sheila,
I have a question.
Hold it. No,
question.
A question about what?
Comment. Do we have to unmute ourselves?
Only if you mute yourself. That was what Linda Landbury's situation was. She had muted herself, okay? So if only if you mute yourself, you have to unmute yourself. Otherwise, it will happen from the remote here. Now, Sheila, very brief, please. Make your quick comment. Go ahead.
I'm not actually sure why my comments should be any more brief than anyone else, but I know you
because
all
we were ready to vote, and this is an exception to what we had already decided to do, Sheila, so just make your comment brief, please. Thank you.
Okay, I will say that I feel that Craig McKee is one of the most upstanding people of great integrity that I've ever met in my life. I have never witnessed anything from him at all that I would consider to be anything less than impeccable ethics. And I want to say, on the other hand, my observations of what Wayne Costey has brought to both the teleconference and to the listserv is nothing but obfuscation and lies and all manner of wasting our time and confusing the issue and trying to muddy the waters as much as possible.
Amen.
A battle between good and evil, and I think to vote to continue to keep Wayne Costey in the teleconference would be to basically be putting a stake into the heart of the teleconference and basically condemning it to death.
Okay. All right, so now we are ready to vote, and everybody should be unmuted. So all in favor of removing Wayne Costey from the teleconference, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
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 All right, I believe the ayes have it, but because of the serious nature of this, I'm going to ask that we do a roll call vote so that it's very clear, so there's no question about my having misjudged the result, okay? So, Craig, would you take the roll, please?
Okay, I'll say a name, and then you just let me know. Maybe we should say yes or no, just because it's easier to hear the difference rather than yay or nay.
Well, you need you need abstain also.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll press
all right. Abstain when your name is called, please.
Okay. All right. Then I'll read. Mike Cook.
Aye.
Are you there, Mike?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
No.
Yes.
Barely.
So, are you voting yes to remove Wayne or no not to remove Wayne?
Or abstain.
Michael,
Mike, you're abstaining?
Are you there?
This is going to take a while.
He said yay.
He said yay? Okay.
Michael Cook, are you saying yes? Michael Cook, are you saying yes?
It looks like he's no longer on the call, but I thought
he said
yes.
I don't hear him saying anything.
I heard him say
yes. He said yes.
Come back
he
to him, Craig.
If he
wants to vote, he'll come back on the call, okay?
Okay, yeah, we'll come back to him. Cheryl.
Yay.
Cheryl
yes.
Curtis.
Yes.
Barbara Honegger.
Yes.
We don't have Nita Renfrew, eh? We said that before.
Right.
Barton Bruce.
Abstain.
Barry Zwicker.
Yes.
Wayne Costey.
No.
Frank Tolopko.
Yes.
Dick Attlee.
No.
Gene LaRotonda.
Abstain.
Dave Hooper.
Abstain.
David Cole.
No.
Lawrence Fine.
Abstain.
Marie Spike.
Yes.
Lynn Bradbury.
Abstain.
Bill Wilt.
Abstain.
Bonnie Faulkner.
Abstain.
Xander Arena.
No.
Marty Hopper.
Abstain.
James Hufford.
Yes.
Greg Longo.
Yes.
Adam Ruff.
Yes.
Tim Michael.
No.
Sherry Aspen.
Abstain.
Sue Serpa.
Yes.
Sheila Casey.
Yes, I want Lane removed.
Peter Ketchum.
Yes.
Richard Gage. I guess Richard's not with us. Dwayne Dietz.
No.
Kelly David.
Yes.
Andy Steele.
Yes.
Is Mike Cook? Okay, I'm messaging Mike and see if he wants to weigh in. I don't know what happened to him. But did I miss anyone else?
I heard Mike say yay. So did I.
Did.
Yeah, Mike said yes.
All right, well, then I'm going to record. Okay. Well, I'm going to record that. Yeah, and I also vote yes. Ken, I assume you're not voting because you're...
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. So we have everybody. If you want to give me a moment, I'll tally it up.
What do you do if abstain wins?
That's a very good question. I'm researching it even as we speak. So give me a moment, and I'll give you the answer. The question is whether a majority needs to be a majority of those who vote yes or no, or a majority of the total, and I believe it's the latter. So my understanding is, and Barry can weigh in on this if he wishes, my understanding is that if the yes votes represent an absolute minority of the total number of people voting, then the motion fails. That's just my preconception. I'm trying to get it researched here real quickly.
Interesting process.
Okay, I'm going to double check this. I've done it twice, but I'm going to do it a third time. I have 16 yays, 6 nays, and 9 abstentions.
Well, in that case, okay. Let me see what the rules say here. Just give me one moment here.
It's good. Yeah.
I looked it up. It says the basic rule, Robert rule, says an abstention does not affect the voting result.
Hmm.
So they're just like a non-vote. So we're out. You abstained. You just didn't vote.
I'd like to
count one way or another.
Provisionally.
That added the abstention to the no's, you would still only have 15. Where you have 16.
Right.
Well,
I have 15. I have 15 yeses. Sorry, I did it again, and I got 15. So. But it doesn't have anything to do with the abstentions.
Well, so we will say provisionally the motion carries. But if it turns out on further research that the interpretation just given us by one of our participants is erroneous, then we will have to revisit the issue and reconsider it. But otherwise, the motion is provisionally passed. Okay? So, let us move on now to our next item, and that would be...
Best moderator I've ever
heard. David Hooper, is it?
Yeah, David Hooper is going... he doesn't need an introduction, I think, because everybody knows that he is the one who made the film Anatomy of a Great Deception, and he's here to give us a synopsis or in a announcement regarding part two of Anatomy of a Great Deception. So, David, the floor is yours. Welcome.
All right. Well, thanks, Ken. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, well, I feel your pain and the heaviness. That's not something that I'm totally ignorant of. So, maybe though I could help end this meeting on a positive note. So I know it's late, and I have Ken condensed this down to 5 one-minute sections. So I'm just going to fly through them. I'm not going to be my normal personal self. I'm going to sound more like a computer, but I'm just doing that so you guys can get to bed early. But pretend I'm putting my normal oomph in it. Basically, here's the plan. We are coming out with AGD2, Anatomy of the Great Deception 2, which is it's a continuation of my personal story. We're going to get much deeper into 9/11, into the how they did it. How was such a big ruse pulled off? We screened some test scenes in San Francisco, which got a very positive reception, and we've gotten very positive reception so far, and we're about to turn a campaign on live in about the next 10 hours. So 9/11 is still the star of the movie, but it was interesting to hear what Xander had to say, because everyone on this phone call knows, you know, when you start to open your eyes to things like 9/11, other things come into view, and you might even start to see some patterns. So 9/11 will be the main character of this movie again. And I'm going to share what happened in my personal life, which it's the second movie in what was always intended to be a trilogy, because it's not like you just figure out the towers. You know, they were not done by 19 Saudis, and you just go about your life, and everything's fine. We all know that's not the way it is. So this is going to follow, in a sense, the Star Wars trilogy. The first movie ended on somewhat of a positive note. This one, frankly, it's going to end up a little bit darker. It's still going to have the draw. It's basically a continuation of the first. So the positioning of this film, you know, and it's funny, I picked up so many things just listening to you guys tonight, but I think we can all agree that there is a vacuum right now where people in this world, certainly in this country, are looking for some type of trusted information and authority sources that, you know, the fact that InfoWars was recently removed, it should be very troubling to people. CNN viewership is dropping like crazy. And just from a business perspective, because that's ultimately what I am. I'm not really a filmmaker. I'm a businessman. That's going to create a lot of gaps that need to be filled by perhaps things like this movie, your organization. And again, calling back to Xander's research, which was awesome, by the way, there may be, this is not the place to discuss it, but I'm going to plant an idea in everyone's head, is that, you know, there may be some reason to increase the size of the umbrella and the audacity of the voice, if you will, because I do believe at the end of the day, and I think, I want to say it was Sherry, and I want to say you, Sherry, you're the teacher, you said something that I absolutely believe and I've observed in this movement, and that is we need unity. And embedded into the theme of this film is it's intended to, again, it's just my story. It's just convenient that this is the conclusion that I will be coming to in this film. which is to look at the bigger picture. You know, we're already starting to connect things like Las Vegas to 9/11, even on this phone call, and we all know that, you know, we're just scratching the surface here. So some of the underlying themes that you'll never see printed on a marketing piece or anything like that, that this film is intended to heal and bring together the 9/11 movement, which, I mean, I'm sitting here tonight. I mean, this was already what the film was going to be about, and I literally, I don't think it's total coincidence that I got to, in a sense, observe some of that. And I take no opinion on your dealings with Wayne. Wayne's a personal friend of mine, and I abstained. But I definitely believe that regardless of what your view on the Pentagon is or the Twin Towers, and I've probably researched that as much as anybody, and I couldn't swear on a Bible exactly what hit those buildings either. And to focus on that is equivalent to holding everything up to figure out if the drunk driver that just T-boned my family was drinking rum or vodka. We know that something happened, and it's part of something much bigger. And so this film is intended to oh, there's some bad blowback. I hope that's not me.
Yep. We'll take care of that momentarily.
So this is not really a 9/11 movie. In fact, one of the slogans of the film is 9/11 is not about history, it's about the future, which I think all of us just intuitively understand. So the film, if you liked the first film, this is going to be the same type of event, but where the same type of film. It's going to be something you can hand to your family or to your friends that, you know, is palatable, that, you know, gets them to do their own thinking. But for me, the interesting part is the business part of it and how we're going to get this out into the world. We wanted to unveil us with the first movie, but frankly, we were just too overwhelmed and just doing our best just to get the movie out, which, ironically, we were a few days late on, so we ended up sending video, electronic versions of the movie instead of copyrighted discs to about 45 cities in which it was being screened on opening night. And one of those got online, and it went viral, which is actually, you know, at the time I was freaking out because I'm wondering, oh my, how am I going to, you know, buy some chicken for my kid over here? But something nice that happened is that it got a really big audience. And even still today, still live on YouTube, there's so many people that host it. We just went and counted them a few weeks ago. And live on YouTube alone is about 10 million. And I know of another 20 or so million, and including ours, versions of the movie that were taken down. So from a business perspective, I think we're going to be able to bring some, again, another wave of very serious light onto this topic. And I'm going to basically be spending the next year in the media doing things like this to help bring this thing to the surface. So here's the business plan. Because the business plan of the movie really begins literally in a few hours. When we roll into work tomorrow morning, our crowdfund campaign goes on. And this plan will stretch out from tomorrow through 9/11 of next year. So in the interest of time, just working backwards, and maybe you can close your eyes and imagine this a little bit with me, but we are going to premiere this film in several cities, but with certainty, New York City, Chicago, San Francisco, and my current hometown, Detroit. And we could scale this up a little bit. Now, these are big premieres. These are red carpet. This is photographers. This is injecting some fun and some Hollywood into a very tragic and serious subject that everyone on this call has essentially dedicated their life to on some level. So we're not going to mock 9/11 in any way, but just personally, I think, you know, it's been 18 years, and if we don't reach that critical mass in the next 2 years or so, This really starts to just become the Gulf of Tonkin in history. And just as a regular citizen that cares, we are coming out with two back-to-back films. Now, I don't have time to go into all the ways that we are going to intrusively market this film, but I'm going to share one of them with you right now just to give you an idea of how we're approaching this. Because we can't really count on the mainstream media anymore. We've seen what happened to InfoWars. I'm sure if anyone here has a YouTube channel, I wouldn't be surprised if you've been demonetized or shut down. Or we come across that constantly, and there's no platform out there, frankly, I'd trust other than our own. So film would come out in September, which gives us access to, in the month leading up to the premieres, one of the things that we're going to do to intrusively market this is anywhere that there is a cash register. So take Chicago, for example, the Chicago Theater on State Street. And we've got a team of college kids. We already have several film departments that are interested in helping us. I spoke briefly with a few folks over at AE 911 earlier, and there was some interest that their local chapters might be interested in getting involved in this, because this isn't just spreading the truth like we always have. This is spreading the truth while earning money doing it. We've done some anecdotal research. I'll just give you the story I gave earlier today of one little 7-Eleven store in the base of my building in the city of Chicago. And I know the owner, and he owns about a dozen 7-Eleven stores. And I asked him one day, I said, hey, if a young person with some energy, now this could be a college kid or a 9-11 activist of some sort, of which there are many that are looking for something to do, were to come into your store and say, hey, we've got a little item that can be a floor display or something by the cash register. We get your cashier to promote it, which skyrockets those little trinkets that people buy at checkout. He doesn't have to pay us any money, but we circle back, keep them restocked in the time leading up to the premieres, and we're selling tickets and the DVDs through these. And he said, I'd let you put up posters and images promoting 9/11 Truth. Whatever it is we want, you know, this teleconference, for instance, we've got a lot of mobility with it. And I just was doing the math. You know, every minute, about 3 to 4 people walk in through that store, and you extrapolate it out. That one store had about 2,000-3,000 people a day, and his stores cumulatively had 36,000 people a day. And I did a little math that, you know, a DVD costs about $1 once the movie's made. So we could drop literally hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of inventory that's not very expensive to us. And yes, we might be dealing with more bad debt than your typical business, but most of those guys are honest. And he said he would be very interested in that. We just drop off product. He doesn't tie up any cash flow. It's a high margin item by the register. And then he pulled me aside and said, but Dave, there's another reason I would do this. And he happens to be Muslim. And he said, because I do not believe the government's story. And he feels hand-tied in being able to ever even talk about it in our society. So he's what I would call a closet 9/11 truther. And that one, and I know there are millions of people out there like this. I had a girlfriend that owned a little female boutique. They had purses and shoes and things of that nature. And she said, her words, quote, shit, I'll just put it on. You know, I'm a truther. I can't really go promoting it because that's not my business. But to have someone else put something here, something I believe in, I wouldn't care about the profit. I'd do it for, you know, the same reason we're all on this call so late at night. Because when you see these things, it changes you. And we probably have a lot more allies in this world than we realize, and we might be able to tap into them through some old-fashioned methods of shaking someone's hand and meeting them face-to-face. And now we offer an opportunity for really 9/11 activists, really in any major city, if we can find what we call an ambassador to help coordinate things there. But we can actually spread awareness and earn money doing it. And all the money that it will be brought in for this, outside of the payroll for my staff, goes into promoting it, turning however many cities we have an official premiere in, and we will certainly have our screening kits, which I know some of the people on this call even purchased. Hi, Jim Hufford. And we're certainly going to be promoting those. And there's unbelievable cross-promotion opportunities. And again, we're trying to tap into the 30 million people and monetize them in a way. And I know I don't like using words like this when we're gathering around finding the truth to something that we are all seeing in our society that frankly is dangerous, but maybe a little business wouldn't hurt us either. And so the basic plan to summarize it all is we'd like you guys to get involved. There's many ways to do it. We'd like you guys to become a part of these events. Unless there's something else planned, let's make these events the rallying point of next year's 9/11. And we'll have all year to promote it and to, we're certainly, I've put a staff together in March of this year, which I've been funding them privately, training them, getting them up to speed. And they will have my head if I don't have this thing turned on by 8 a.m. tomorrow because they're ready to go. And the feeler calls they've put out, the response, I mean, I'm blown away by it because I still am just a regular guy. I'm literally just sitting on a couch in a very, I'm just a regular guy. But if we can use that story to get, to catch some tailwind, perhaps there's some hope. And we take no position on what Q is, but maybe there's some hope in the White House. Maybe that's a debate for another time. But there's hope there. And maybe there's some tailwind that the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 that seems to be bringing the most legitimate potential case to bear could certainly not be hurt by the fact that there's familiarity with this film and there's co-promotion. And the film has just been seen by a lot of people on Capitol Hill, congressmen and senators, and it still seems to be alive today. I get comments still constantly, and the viewership goes up by thousands a week. And we just felt like the time was right to come out with it. So I'm going to kind of stop talking. I've got some ways that, I guess, give me 30 more seconds and then I'll turn it over to you, Ken. For anyone that's interested in helping, certainly I'd love your advice. The vetting process a group like this would put me through, actually I would welcome it. Maybe help with refining the plan. I think a lot of you might have some business connections that might also be able to help with it. But I guess before all that is just your general approval. Is this something that is you think would be of interest to the movement? Another way is, when this our Indiegogo campaign goes live, is to just get involved in it. You don't even need to pre-purchase anything, but we will have perks and things of that nature. But we're going to actually use that campaign for a year, which will end up becoming it will turn into the promotion for the premieres that we have in the west, middle, and east portions of the country. People can host a trailer, they can endorse the film, put a social media post. There's a lot of ways that you can help. I'm not going to take up a lot of time with that because that's explained in other places online that you're going to get links to later.
You might want to send a single link to Craig to put into the minutes so that others who aren't here tonight who wish to participate with you can help, okay?
All right. How? What's your due date on getting that in?
Well, as soon as possible, but, Craig generally doesn't get the minutes out for several weeks, but really try to do it as soon as you can.
All right. We'll get that to you in the next 10 to 12 hours, let's say.
Yeah.
So, and we'll have directions. Actually, you know where you can go right now, and it'll end up taking you to the same place, is just go to our company's website, which is GenPop Media. As in general population, genpopmedia.com. And it's been a long night, so I'm officially turning the microphone back over.
Well, we'll take a moment to see if anybody has any questions or anything. Let's go into Q&A.
Oh, there was one important.
Sorry, David, you were cut off. Go ahead.
Oh, I was probably going to come up in the questions. One of the things I want to do at these events, because we're going to be engaging a lot of people in this campaign, which is going to last a year, is I want to honor some 9/11 truthers. Now, I've got my own ideas of who I'd like to honor, but one of the things we wanted to do was to allow people to submit names. And, you know, while this campaign is going on, we capture all the submissions and we have the audience vote on it. And we honor it, almost make it a little bit perhaps of an awards ceremony aspect, not to lighten the message of 9/11, but to draw the people in, that, you know, the story portion of it, the play on the things that the mainstream media uses to play on them, in a sense. That's all I wanted to add to it. And
okay.
You guys have some questions if you have any.
Yeah, so we're going to go into Q&A mode, I believe. So star 6 if you want to ask a question or make a comment. But before we do that, I need to make an announcement that having done further research, I discovered that we were operating on a false or wrong supposition, and the expulsion of a member always requires a two-thirds vote. Okay, that's page 628 of Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised. So there it is. So the motion actually fails because the expulsion of a member requires a two-thirds vote at all times, and the reason for that is because anytime you undo something that's been done, it requires a two-thirds vote. And when somebody becomes a member, that's doing something, or they're accepted as a member, so undoing it requires the two-thirds vote.
You
yep.
can,
no.
You said to me earlier that it was just a majority rule.
Well, that was my understanding, but I said on further research, I find out it's erroneous, and we have to go by the rules. I mean, the rules are the rules.
Well, the vote was 10. First of all, we've removed somebody else from the call a couple of years ago on a majority vote.
Oh, I believe it was a two-thirds vote easily. Okay. I'm sure it was a two-thirds vote. So
in any case, we can only
go by the rules as we know them. But the rules are the rules. Okay, the rules say two-thirds.
But
okay?
Are we counting the abstentions if they don't get
no.
involved in it?
It's
15
to 6.
You don't have a two-thirds.
We do have two-thirds. It's 15 to 6. That's 21 votes, so that means you need 14 votes to pass it.
15 to 6.
We have 15.
Oh, that's right. Then the question becomes whether or not the abstentions count toward it.
Well, they
right?
they don't count.
Well, that has to be researched. But, yes, if they don't count, then
yeah.
they don't count. Okay. So 15 to 6 is, yeah, that would be... That would be two-thirds, wouldn't it?
Plus one.
Two-thirds plus one, yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, my mistake then. So I'll have to continue to research the question about the abstentions, but otherwise it sounds like we're still it still has merit as a decision provisionally. Okay. So sorry about that. And let's go on to... your questions and answers from Barton Bruce. Question. Go ahead, Barton.
Hi. If I'd known how the rules work, my abstention would have been a no, and I don't know how many other people would feel the same way, too, but this confusion about the rules and how they work is not good.
Well, yeah, somebody should have asked that question beforehand. But frankly,
right.
I don't think anybody has the answer right now. Yeah. So we'll research it. We'll find out. I'll get the straight dope.
It'd be interesting.
So, did you have a question for? Do you have a question for David?
No, that was it. This is basically.
Okay, this is only about questions for David right now.
Okay.
So, if you have a question for David, please remove yourself from the queue. Xander Arena. Xander Arena.
Hey there. So I was just curious, in the original Anatomy for Deception, you talked about your family struggling with your realizations, and just personally, if you would share, how is the larger portion of your family, your extended family, accepting the message now?
pretty well. I mean, I've gotten very polarized and mixed results, but most of those are from outside my family. and just some other things that were going on in my personal life that really had nothing to do with this. Or maybe they did, and I just didn't realize it. But, you know, my sister, for example, one day I just said, hey, have you ever looked into Sandy Hook? She rolled her eyes at me, and she came home for Christmas a few days later, and she said, oh, my gosh, Dave, I just looked into Sandy Hook. I can't believe it. And she had her own thoughts about it, and she's been going like that ever since. And they've really all become really 9/11 truthers, but most of them closeted. They're not public about it. However, I have noticed that at parties, you know, 5-6 years ago, it was embarrassing to be a 9/11 truther in a sense, but it almost seems like it's switched. Like it's almost like when someone brings it up, there's so many more truthers than there are official government storyists. Just an anecdotal observation. I don't know if anyone else has seen that, but my family's come around. I mean, they totally believe 9/11 was an inside job, but they're not out walking the streets with picket signs or anything like that. At least not yet.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Okay, Barbara Honiger.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me, David?
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Yeah, how are you? First, I want to say I think your first film of the trilogy, looking forward to both future films, is just fantastic. And what really makes it stand out, of course, is that you've personalized it in terms of your own evolution of coming around. That's what really makes it unique. So congratulations on that. My question to you is, of course, based just upon your first film, and that is, tell me if I'm right about this. I was surprised at the beginning, if I recall, but certainly at the end, because that's the most recent in my memory, having watched it again just about a week ago. It feels to me like you're, this is just my take, but because you quote the Bible about evil, it's as if, my take on it is if you're trying to get across the message that there's some kind of metaphysical evil behind this instead of, you know, Bush, Cheney, etc. If that's true, I think it's a mistake to generalize it that way because they're real human beings who need to be brought to justice. I'm on the board of the 9/11, on the board of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. I was centrally involved in the research and drafting of the grand jury petition, which is so important right now. And you know, for achieving 9/11 justice from 9/11 truth, it's very important to remember that grand juries have to indict real flesh and blood human beings. So that's my question to you.
Well, great question, and I totally understand it. And anyone that knows me knows that I don't ever jump to conclusions. I mean, I just, especially everyone on this call, we've all been around the block now where we can't even believe the things we see, and I'm very slow to come to conclusion. Nor do I think there's enough media out there that is doing the finger pointing. You know, I like the role we started with the first movie, which was I'm going to comment about things and how they affected me, and I think it's because I just am a regular person that that's why a lot of people have been able to connect with it on some way. But there's nothing I think that would discredit. I mean, I care about 9/11 truth very much. I mean, it's what originally opened my eyes. You know, there's a hot sense of loyalty. And I do want to see the people that were truly responsible for this brought to justice, absolutely. But it's hard to answer that question specifically, but I can just say in general that I don't think there's anything in there that you would ever have to worry about like that. It's not going to... The only thing that's embarrassing that's in there is how I personally reacted to a few things I discovered, which I think a lot of people are going to identify with. But it's really not a finger-pointing exercise in any way. I'll let the lawyers handle that one, if you will. Hope that helps.
Okay, and Bill Wilt.
Hi, David. This is Bill Wilt from Boston 9/11 Truth.
Hi, Bill.
I was left hanging at the last, at the end of the movie. It was like, but what is his, what did his wife say to him? What was that interaction like? I'd like to see how she came around. What was her comment? So that's, yeah, that's my question. Is that, are you going to address that in number two, or is it addressed?
Yeah, we are absolutely going to address everything that happened. The dramatic part of me doesn't want to reveal that yet.
Okay.
Because I'm not, we still have a few decisions to make, and I'm not 100% on exactly how we're going to portray that. But I am going to be, I'm going to essentially bare my soul, if that means anything. There's a lot of it, a lot of self-reflection, and, you know, just thinking about these things and what it means. And I will definitely comment on, you know, what has happened to my family. And it's going to be a chronological story of what was really happening with these flashes in and out of 9/11 and back and forth from modern day to what we'd heard back then. I lost my train of thought.
You've answered my
question.
Yeah,
you will hear,
that's a
you
great
will hear
film.
About that.
Thanks.
The family.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, well, David, thank you very much for keeping us up to speed on what's going on with part two, and we'll all look forward to its screening whenever that should come our way, okay?
Now, you'll be hearing about it for sure. So thank you for having me, all of you, very much. I appreciate
keep
it. I'm going to hang on if you guys don't mind and just listen to the rest
of
the call.
Of course. You're welcome here at any time. And if you'd like to be one of our invitees, if you're not already, let me know and we'll add you to our list, okay? So you'll always get to, draft agendas and so forth in advance.
Yeah, I get them now. We're good.
Oh, okay. So I need to go back now. We need to go back to this question of the rules of order as they apply to this decision. I'm going to read from page 4 of the 10th edition of Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised. The basic principle of decision in a deliberative assembly is that to become the act or choice of the body, a proposition must be adopted by a majority vote, that is, direct approval, implying assumption of responsibility for the act, must be registered by more than half of the members present and voting on the particular matter in a regular or properly called meeting. And then it says later, when a decision is to be based on more than a majority, the requirement most commonly specified is a two-thirds vote, that is, the expressed approval of at least two-thirds of those present and voting. So that implies to me that abstentions are votes. Even though they're not votes yes or no, they're still votes. Those are people present and voting. And those have to be considered in tallying the final result. So based on this information, I'm going to assume that we are agreed that...
Now, can I have a question first? On the first part that you read, how did we get from a simple majority to a two-thirds? I didn't understand why.
It says when the decision is to be based on more than a majority. So in other words, if the decision is one that requires a two-thirds vote, for example,
whether this required that or not? I don't understand.
Because the expulsion of a member always requires that. But even if it was a majority vote,
where does Where does it say that the expulsion of a member
requires? I read that earlier. That was on page 6, I think it was 628. It's just stated, no, not 628. Well, I'll get it for you in a second here, but it's just boldly stated that the expulsion of a member always requires a two-thirds vote. And that would make sense if you understand the spirit of Robert's rules, because anything that's done in order to be undone requires a supermajority. I hadn't thought about that earlier, but it does follow. So I think even if it were a majority that were required here, I think we're still close, but it actually does require a two-thirds vote to expel someone from membership.
Well, I'd like to see where that rule is though before we make a final decision on that because.
Okay. Let me see if I can back.
But we have 2/3 anyway, right?
Not if abstentions count. If abstentions count, then we do not have 2/3. And I believe, according to what I just read, that they do. Okay, and that's what it seems that the people that were abstaining, we heard from one of them, felt that that was the case, that it would count against a majority vote.
Well, they don't count in any other vote. In any other vote, abstaining is like not voting. It's the same thing as not voting.
Well, if the abstentions are negligible, they don't mean much. But if the abstentions are considerable, as in this case, they can shift the balance. Okay.
If they count, but not if they don't count.
Well, I just read. Did you want me to reread this passage?
Yeah, please.
Okay, sure. The basic principle of decision in a deliberate assembly is that to become the active choice of the body, a proposition must be adopted by a majority vote. That is, direct approval, implying assumption of responsibility for the act, must be registered by more than half of the members present and voting on the particular matter. So that means that cannot be understood anyway other than a majority of the people who are present and voting must say yes. Okay?
But an abstention is not a vote.
I believe it is. They are present and voting. They're simply okay. Well, that's
well,
a good.
Can I make a suggestion that we instead of taking we can argue. Let's do the research and figure this out and report.
Fair enough, Cheryl. That's a fair assumption. If there's no objection, we'll continue the research and everybody's free to research on his or her own. We'll get back on this in the future teleconference. So. That brings us to Barbara, I believe. Barbara, you're going to give us a brief report. Are you muted? You're probably muted. Okay, let's try this. Okay, Barbara, did you want to give us your 5 minutes?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to point out, and I don't intend to take more than 5 minutes, but David Hooper was going to take 5 minutes and took closer to 20. So let me just make that for
Hello.
The
Hello,
other thing
is...
I want...
Go ahead.
The other thing I want to make for the record before I begin, I was trying to say this and you wouldn't let me speak before the vote. And that is, I just wanted to point out that, Ken, it was your refusal to allow either myself or Cheryl to read the entire motion at the very beginning that led to Duane's objection that the entire motion wasn't voted on. So that is not our fault. We did everything we could to make the motion that was voted on the entire motion in
You're mistaken, but I'm not going to argue with you now. We're not on that right now. We're on this. Do you want to make your presentation or not?
I think she's right.
No, I am right.
He may be right, but we're not debating that right now. We're on a different agenda item, and Barbara is off topic. So, Barbara, do you want to get on topic or what?
I'm not off topic. You wouldn't let me speak.
You are.
Before.
You are
All
off
right.
topic.
All right. So the other thing I just want to mention is that we heard Sherry Aspen read from Robert's Rules of Order that an abstention is not
You're off topic. You are off topic, and I'm not going to ask you one more time if you want to make your presentation now or not. That's all you have the floor for right now. Do you want to make your presentation or not?
I'm going to make
it's getting
my presentation.
Very late, and you're taking up a lot of people's time here unnecessarily. Do you want to make your presentation?
Oh, I disagree.
Well, that's too bad. If you want, you can make a point of order if you wish, and we can debate this too if you'd like. But otherwise, please be quiet. Barbara, do you want to make your presentation now?
Of course I do.
Then stop going off topic and make your presentation, please.
I was making points of order. All right, my presentation. Okay, so if I recall correctly, my presentation is... on the agenda is about the very exciting new 9/11 truth witness. Cheryl, can you tell me, I believe I sent the the link to Robert Alexander's sworn affidavit. Is that correct? And did that go to everybody before this call or not? I can't remember.
I don't remember. I think you must have sent it to Ken. I don't know. Ken, did you get that?
Ken, was that in the... Was that sent or not?
I'm sorry. What were you asking again, Barbara? I thought you were talking to Cheryl.
Well, I'm talking to anyone who knows. I thought I had sent Robert Alexander, the new witness, which is the subject of my presentation. I thought that I had sent you and Cheryl and Craig his sworn jurid affidavit, the link online to post. Was it posted to everyone? If not, I'll send it after the call.
Let's see. I believe we did put, I did list.
Yes, it's in the minutes.
A link.
It's in the agenda.
It's in the agenda.
Yes, in the agenda.
It is in the agenda. Very good.
Yeah.
So I just confirmed everybody to the sworn jurid affidavit, sworn under penalty of perjury by a new witness who contacted the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry and went back and forth with our then president, Jane Clark, for a very long time. And the Lawyers Committee encouraged him to do a sworn jurid affidavit, which he did under penalty of perjury. So it will speak for itself. But I just want everybody to know why you need to read it and why it's so critically important. If you recall, the 28 pages, which were finally released and made public after 15-plus years, the 28 pages focus on five individuals only, five major individuals. They focus on Prince Bandar, who was then the Saudi ambassador to the United States, later went on to be the head of Saudi intelligence. It's hard to imagine, unless you're the king of Saudi Arabia or the crown prince, that you're more representative of the government of Saudi Arabia than that. So Prince Bandar, number one, and two and three are only two of the alleged 19 hijackers of 9/11, Mr. Al-Hazmi and Mr. Al-Midar. Just two of the 19, and then two middlemen whose names are Saudi middlemen whose names are difficult to pronounce, but middlemen who, according to the 28 pages, linked Prince Bandar and his wife and their financing and protection and finding them places to live in San Diego, etc., linking Prince Bandar to these two alleged 9/11 hijackers who happened to both be on the alleged Pentagon plane. So this all links back to the Pentagon. So what you will see in this new sworn jurid affidavit, sworn under penalty of perjury, and in the affidavit you will see that he has gone to the FBI, gone on record multiple times, including 2 weeks before 9/11, twice and again after 9/11, and then again and again and again to the FBI, as well as to the IG, to the Department of Justice, to the White House, to all of the presidential candidates, Republican and Democrat in the 2016 election. He's done everything he could to get the truth out. And what you will learn is that in January of 2000, which is precisely the date even the 9/11 Commission itself, the official story, claims these two alleged hijackers, Al-Hazmi and Al-Midar, came into San Diego and lived there in January of 2000, in that very month, into his place of business in the San Diego area in Oceanside, which happens to be where Sherry Astin lives, in Oceanside, into his Dorothy's Military Surplus store that's been in business for 50 years, came into his place of business in January of 2000, Prince Bandar and Al-Hazmi, one of the future alleged hijackers. This eliminates those two Saudi businessmen in the 28 pages and puts one of those hijackers at a very minimum, and you'll see from the rest of the sworn affidavit, also Mohammed Atta and three others, 2 weeks before 9/11, in the presence in January of 2000 of Prince Bandar himself. A hijacker, alleged hijacker, and Prince Bandar, and John Brennan. And John Brennan, who went on, who at the time was the CIA station chief in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, which is the head CIA officer in Saudi Arabia, close personal friend of Prince Bandar, so close personal friend that Bandar took him on the Hajj personally. So this is an extremely important new sworn jurid affidavit that I can tell you is now in the hands thanks to the Jersey girls themselves who got it there in the hands of the Motley Rice Law Firm, who are representing 6,911 different family members. So if anyone would like to have him on the radio, have him on TV, have him come and talk to your group, please let me know. I will facilitate that. This is his mission in life. Thank you very much. If you have any questions.
Okay. So let's move into Q&A mode. If anybody would like to ask Barbara a question about what she's just informed us about. Star 6, if you want to make a comment or ask a question. Star 6, if you want to make a comment or ask a question. Okay, Marie.
I'm probably not going to be allowed to ask this or say this, but I just found information online that specifically answers how abstentions are handled when counting a vote. So I have a specific answer. I found it in several places.
Can you just quote it to us real quick and then we'll move on?
Yes. Many jurisdictions, well, this has got to do with, okay, adopted by Robert's Rules of Order. This is Robert's mm-hmm. Rules of Order. Abstentions are counted and noted, but not as a yes or no vote. An abstention does not affect the voting result.
Okay, thank you.
That's it.
Would you send me a link to that, please?
I can send you several links, yes. What's your email, please?
Diogenes, Diogenes, Quest, Quest, at gmail.com.
Diogenes, Quest?
Yep.
At Gmail.
Yep.
I'll do that right now. Thank you. Okay.
Sherry.
This is Sherry. I live right next to, 8 miles, I'm 8 miles away from that store. And I just started a 9/11 meetup group for North County, San Diego, to be a sister one to our big one down in San Diego. I'm about 45 minutes from those guys. And I was going to go in there and call him and, see if he wants to join. It's so close, and I'm always looking for people to help. So what do you think about that, Barbara? Hello? Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Barbara might be muted. Hang on. Yeah, I forgot to unmute her. Hang on.
And also, as far as a point of order, I found also the exact question that we're looking. It says, I'm wondering if Robert's Rules of Order has specifics with regards to moving board members from office. So I found the rules, and it is 2/3 of the majority of all of us. So if there's 25 of us on there, whether we have abstain or not, it still has to be 2/3 of the group. Mm-hmm. It says here, it says there, the phrase abstention of votes is really an oxymoron, an abstention being a refusal to vote. To abstain to voting, there can be no such thing.
Yeah. Does it say in there any place about whether it has to be a vote present or present in voting? And what does voting mean? You see, that's where we're having a problem.
That's what it says. It says, if formal, it says, please, it depends if we have bylaws. If you had bylaws on rules of disciplinary procedures,
we do not.
You have to go by your bylaws. But we don't have bylaws. If formal disciplinary procedures are required, then the member does not have a right to due process and does have a right to reasonable time to prepare his defense.
No.
If he does not have a right to review the evidence against him, though.
We're not interested in that. We're just interested in whether abstention, the question of whether the people.
It says if formal disciplinary procedures are not required, and we don't have those, you don't have bylaws specifically about this, the motion to remove him is debated the same as any other motion. In this case, such a motion requires a 2/3 vote, a vote of a majority of the entire membership. So if there's 25 of us on this call, then 2/3 of those
Well, the membership is wider than the call. Unfortunately, that gets into another rabbit hole. We can't go there right now, so we've agreed to postpone this discussion.
Okay, well, it looks like...
So, Barbara, do you want to respond to Sherry?
Yes, I do. Yes, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
Sherry, it would be a wonderful idea. I'm sure that... I can't speak for him, but I'm sure that Bob Alexander would be so happy to talk to you and get involved. This is his life's mission.
Oh, good. I'll contact him. He's my neighbor, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
So, okay.
Okay, let's see. Anybody else? Yeah, Sherry. Oh, that was Sherry, wasn't it? Okay, so I guess that's it. Thank you, Barbara. And now, boy. It's really pushing the envelope, but if anybody can make a 2-minute summary or less of events that we haven't heard about yet, 9/11 anniversary events, we agreed to review those this month. So try to keep it very, very brief, and just let everybody know what's been happening around the country. So
Ken,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, can I make a motion that we postpone that until next month?
You sure can. Okay, I have to unmute everybody so we can. Is there a second to postpone this motion?
I'll second it.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing no objections, then we will move that agenda item to next month's agenda. And now it's time for announcements. Anybody have an announcement they'd like to make? The mics are open, so just shout out your name and say what you have to say. No announcements?
Wow.
I have a suggestion.
No,
announcements. I'm a member of San Diego. Okay.
Announcements. If you want to announce like an upcoming event or something you're planning on doing or something like that, okay? So anybody have an announcement?
I have one for next year, 9/11. Can anybody hear me?
I'm sorry, yeah, you have a suggestion for the next 9/11?
Yeah, that we would have this is Gene LaRotonda from Pittsburgh. I'd just suggest that we would all start thinking about a convention next year, maybe a great debate or something significant to bring attention to this. I mean, we're all truthers, and that I think it would be great. I don't understand why 17 years later there aren't just massive groups that whole week. I mean,
so
Comic-Con can have a convention of furries. We should be able to have something.
Are you trying to work on something like that right now?
Yeah, I would just like just plant the seed that we all just start maybe thinking about something next year that we could all do together.
Good idea.
Thank you. All right, so any other announcements? Well, hearing no other announcements, then...
Well, I guess I have one. I'm a member of San Diego 9/11 Truth. We're pretty active,
uh-huh.
And we rent the Joyce Beard Community Center once a month for a speaker or a film, or, you know, we have a big discussion group. We just hosted Christopher Bolin, and he was standing room only.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have a pretty good... So I just want to invite, like, Barbara to come on down, and people will host. You know, we'd like to have speakers. We do a little fundraisers for them every time. So I just wanted to throw that out there. So
Okay. Any other announcements? Well, hearing none, then I appreciate everyone's patience tonight. It's been a very long night and a very trying night, we will get back together again the last Wednesday of October, and we'll see you all then. Have a good night.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Good night.